hangers doing in this closet when I told you no wire hangers ever? Look and work, some of them dead, and I hear people saying she's getting old. What do I get? A daughter! Who cares as much about the beautiful dresses I give her as she cares about me? What wire hangers doing in this closet? Answer me! I buy you beautiful dresses and you treat them like they're some fish rag. You $200 dress on a wire hanger. We'll see how many you buy the hiddens of here. We'll see. We'll see. Get out of business. We're going to say how many wire hangers you've got in your closet.
Exchange Studio, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio. This is the Rick Emerson Show.
It really is like they beamed somebody in right from the cast of Guiding Light, too. It was as though, and Faye Dunaway, who really is an amazingly talented and gifted actress in many ways, really has done works of a stunning subtlety and depth. She displays none of that there. She has all kinds of texture, many hundreds of facets to her acting ability, none of them present in that movie.
And that was the role of a lifetime.
Totally. Get the act. That's all it is. All you have to do is have one scene like that and be your set for the rest of your life. It's like we were talking about those guys in Europe yesterday who have the Final Countdown song. Doesn't even matter. It could be the schlockiest work imaginable.
You just see Joe thrashing about on stage.
Totally. That's it. You just do it. You just create the one indelible work, and you will be assured employment for the rest of your professional life. Fantastic. Well done, Faye Dunaway. God bless her. Just do that and be molested by John Huston, and you're all set. That's it. That's a life. All right. It's 4 minutes and 18 seconds after the hour of 11 in this, the month of June in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming along and making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio.
This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for coming by.
503-733-2. It was either that or the precious bodily fluid speech from Dr. Strangelove. But I couldn't find a clean enough version of it. They were all kind of scratchy. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. If you would like to join us today, telephonically speaking, with your comments, your clarifications, your kvetches, your 2 cents, your whining, your bitching, your moaning, your what have you. Don't worry if you have nothing meaningful to say. Don't worry if your contributions don't bear any semblance of relation to the topic at hand. Don't worry if they are completely and totally off the beaten path. Don't worry if the beaten path is even visible from where you're standing. Scotty will pay it no mind. You'll pick up the phone, you'll dial, he'll answer. You won't even get your name out. He'll just, Rick Emerson Show. Hi, my name is, hold on. And you'll go back on the, you'll be put back on the screen.
It's
and I will
find screening.
Yes, I will pick up, I'll pick up the call, and I will talk to you having no idea what it is you've come to share. But that's okay. It's part of the magic, the glory, the wonder, the brilliance, the power that is
the Rick Emerson radio program.
It's 503-733-2970. We're now calling this a telonym, by the way. That is a phrase that we are coining now in the Rick Emerson Show. It is T-E-L-E-N-Y-M. Telonym. It is 503-733-2970 or 503-P-E-by-70, if you would like to join us. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Rick@rickemerson.com. It is too late. Somebody's pointing out that if we did like a Baby Jane thing and then a Sybil thing, it's too late to do like a Psycho Mom trifecta. Because we only got the one day tomorrow, and then, you know, and then it's Monday. I don't know what we're going to do tomorrow. I almost did the... Here's another movie speech I almost wait. I tried to do the... Because Sarah Dillon has gone to this. She's on an, on an airplane to New Orleans. I tried to do the airplane... You know, the what's his guts? The Robert Stack. Now, is it Robert Stack or is it Leslie Nielsen? Who's the guy that does it? You tell him when he's out there, up against it, and the brakes are beating the boys, Leslie Nielsen. And then Robert Stack's the guy in the tower. Anyway, so I was going to do an airplane speech, but I wasn't able to find it in. So we went with Mommy Dearest, which is sort of a standby. In any event, it's 503-733-2970 today, 503-733-2970. You can also email us, rick@rickemerson.com. You can also email our good friend Tim Riley, tim@970.am, or scottyj@970.am. It is Thursday, and welcome to Day 12, my chums, my amigos, mi compadres. Here's what we're going to be talking about today. Here's a smattering of the topics which we're going to be holding forth on today for your entertainment and amusement as we present to you more stories of comedy. CNN radio correspondent James Roop is going to be joining us today. He'll be talking about Phil Spector and then the obligatory Paris Hilton news. There's really nothing even going on with Paris Hilton. It's just...
She's been moved.
Really?
Yeah.
Never mind. I take it back. Apparently there's all manner of things going on. Moved out of the, the nut ward into the regular ward?
I'll see. It's the news team.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. I don't want to give...
This is the tease upon the tease.
Okay. Well, we'll talk. I was just going to say that mentioning Paris Hilton or having Paris Hilton news has become... It's becoming one of those things where it's like you're in a relationship and every so often you just have to look up from reading the paper in the morning and go, love you. You know, just because. Just to sort of maintain. Because if it doesn't happen 8 or 9, 10, 12 times a day, then things go badly. You just got to do what I... You have to say these things every now and again. It's required. But apparently there is actually Paris Hilton news. Fantastic. So we have Paris Hilton news. We have Phil Spector news. Apparently he's gone crazier. So Jim Roop will join us today from Los Angeles, where you are being urged to bathe less regularly and to stop dumping your trash in the toilet.
As if L.A. didn't already smell bad enough.
Seriously, the whole place just smells like one bad infected sweat sock. Let's be honest. CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard joining us from the Hill today as George Bush's administration teeters ever closer to political implosion with the failure of their immigration bill. What else? Oh, really? Is this true?
That is from Del Monte, and there isn't a sentence in there that makes any sense or goes with a sentence before or after it.
It's written in English. That seems
wrong. It is written in English.
Well, they do sell fruit, so...
All right. Well, there's a press release from... they're calling it an immigration visit.
Yes.
I swear to God. Well, we'll get to this in a second. I swear to God, there's a press release here from the Del Monte Fruit Company, which was raided. What was it? Was the raid yesterday? When did the raid happen?
The day before.
The raid happened on... So that would have been Tuesday. The raid happened Tuesday where they found that 9 out of 10 employees... Or not, what do you call it, legal citizens of this country, which I know came as a stunning surprise to everybody.
Because these are jobs Americans don't want to do.
Of course, no. Americans won't do these jobs at all.
For minimum wage.
No. We do this job for minimum wage, though, so really, what am I...
I don't know what I'm talking about. All right.
So we got a press release from Del Monte. We'll get to that. What else do we have coming up today? We have today's top five. We are joined today by Kristen Bowie and for Sarah F. Dillon, who is in the city of New Orleans today. So we will be counting down Kristen Bowie's top five albums of all time. Scotty J is endeavoring to assemble that as we speak. What else? We will continue our quest for the second worst news story in the history of the world. It's been a while since we've had a contender for that, probably 8, 9, 10 days. Today we have another story that will give the reigning champion a run for its money. So we'll look for the second worst news story in the history of all the world. We'll do that later on. What else? We will announce the AM 970 Glorious Bastard of the Week later on today. You'll win a pair of passes to see OMSI Body Worlds 3 and the assembled admiration of your peers. And we will ask you to help amuse Rick Emerson. Don't call about this now, because see, here's the thing. If I... I don't typically tell people not to call about stuff right away. I don't typically say, like, wait and call about it later on. I'm just saying there are certain things that I know if I uncork them too soon, then they just take over the entire program like some sort of conversational kudzu. And then it's impossible to cut your way through the undergrowth. So the Sopranos has come to an end forever. The Shield has come to an end for, I think, a year. We're between seasons of Entourage right now. And so I got nothing to watch. And so it is the most American of problems.
Are you not a Rescue Me fan?
Well, that's the thing. I haven't watched Rescue Me. I watched the first season, and then I drifted away, and I heard that it became ass. And I don't know whether it has or not. Somebody told me that it went downhill and became terrible.
I still like it.
Well, anyway, is that back now?
I think I heard from somebody that returned yesterday, but I thought it was tomorrow.
It's all very confusing. I don't know.
Season starts are never accurate anymore anyway.
No, and there used to be, and I don't even know what a season is, because I know that, for example, Survivor, the television program, has been on for like 7 years, but we're somehow in like the 13th season of it. It doesn't make any sense at all. So don't call about this yet, but later on we will be doing today's high topic. High topic sounds like a bad cologne worn by talk show hosts. Today we'll be doing a high concept topic. That is not right now, but later on we'll be doing today's high concept phone-in topic, in which I ask you to decide what I will watch on television, because I'm bereft, I got nothing left. There's
nothing on.
Well, but maybe there is, or maybe there isn't. See, I don't even know. There is this sort of fiction, this sort of canard that we constantly put forth in this country about how, well, you know, I got all these channels, and yet there's nothing to watch. And I don't even really know if that's true.
True.
It's
true.
There you go. Topic over. Topic finished. Thanks, Tim. You stay at home and read a good book. In any event.
I need gardening to be done.
That is true. So we'll talk about all that and some other things. Oh, and plus, Scotty J and I got to do this Portland Teen Idol contest. I don't really know. I'm not trying to be down on the Portland Teen Idol people. But as we draw closer to Saturday, I don't really know why I agreed to do that. That's a thing that I was just sort of blindsided by. I answered the phone, and a really nice girl named Natalie said, would you and Sarah Dillon be interested in judging the Portland Teen Idol contest? And I sort of said, well, sure, why not? And then I realized Sarah wasn't going to be here, so now it's not Sarah, now it's me and Scotty.
Well, you're serving the public interest as the public trustee,
I suppose.
Well, in any event, it's 503-733-2970. It is Thursday. It's 503-733-2970. We are joined today by Kristen Bowie, who's endeavoring to track down one of our wonderful engineers to solve some sort of problem faced by Tim Riley, who is working on the following stories for your edification as we speak.
We're taking you downtown, girlie. Please pray for me, banks of petrified Paris Hilton, as the deputies transfer her to a downtown L.A. prison.
In a downtown jail.
A Canadian man is banned from having any more girlfriends. Citizens of the world become just as stupid as Americans, throwing their money away on Pirates of the Caribbean, which has grossed so far $500 million. What a travesty of justice. People are stupid.
Fantastic.
Well, that's our greatest export, I suppose, stupidity.
Stupidity, really.
American-style stupidity.
Job one.
And due to popular demand, Banana Twinkies will make a comeback.
What?
Banana Twinkies will make a comeback.
Now, here's the thing about Banana Twinkies. Now, is it... Maybe I should wait until you're actually talking about the story. Now, is it that banana was the original flavor of Twinkies, or yep. Is it the banana was the flavor during the war? You don't know. I've caught you off guard, unawares, as they used to say. You're not really sure the answer to that, are you?
No, you can tell by the look on my face, couldn't you?
Yeah.
It looks like it's time for some exhaustive research. Well, as soon as I get online.
It's time for somebody to read straight off the Wikipedia page.
You're right. Bananas were in the original Twinkie flavor until the war.
That's what I'm talking about. And then the cream or creme flavor.
Which there was no shortage of in America.
No. Proved to be. There's not enough things in this country filled with cream. We had to start doing that with everything. Steak. Doesn't matter. Olives. Children. Just give them an ice cream filling. I can always tell, by the way, when I've asked you a question.
Because we worked together for years, that's why.
That you.
I don't have to say anything. I can just stand here.
I can always tell. And there's one distinct expression you have. And it's the expression that you use when, for half a second, you think you know the answer to something. You open your mouth, and then your mouth stays frozen open. And
oh,
you furrow
how long
your,
I was.
Your forehead sort of furrows. And then you sort of grin, and your forehead stays sort of wrinkled up, and your mouth stays open, but no sound comes out. And that is the, you know, for just a moment, I thought I had the answer to that question, but now I realize I have nothing.
I'm going to have to start using Botox.
There's a guy, we heard about that guy in Woodburn who'll do it for free in his garage.
Oh, that's true.
All right. 503-733-2970, if you'd like to be part of today's whackicality. Today's, what is it, that term that Mike Chase coined? Whacktastic. If you'd like to be be part of today's whacktastic program. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email. It's rick@rickemerson.com. So all that coming up, top five, glorious bastard of the week, et cetera, so on and so forth. And whatnot, plus Likas 101 this afternoon, Donna Mike at 7 and so forth. Hi, this is the Rick Emerson Show. Who might this be, my friend?
Glenn.
Hi, Glenn. Can we drop the mono bed just a hair there, Kristen? Thank you. Hey, what's up, sir? How can I help you?
Oh, I just wanted to talk to you about Halo 3 a little bit.
Okay, why not?
We're going to have a... I know at the Vancouver Mall, they're going to have a huge event there.
Isn't every event at the Vancouver Mall huge, sir?
It's like their Academy Awards.
I know it's not sponsored by the mall itself. I think it's sponsored by the Games Club.
So it's not really... So it's just a bunch of people showing up.
I know there's going to be a lot of contests and a lot of... big press at this release.
Are they going to be giving away lots of deep fried food to the winner?
I'm pretty sure they will be.
Maybe some sort of stretchy pant like material for you to wear. All right, so when does Halo 3 even come out? I don't even know.
September 25th.
Here's the reason that I
1 a.m.
Here's the Are you going to be camped out? Tell me you're going to be camped out in a pup tent.
Well, actually, there's planning about 350 people.
That's awesome. See, you're underestimating the power of gamers, Rick.
Yes, I understand. Well, and the lack of the paucity of other real activities to take part in Vancouver. Here's the thing. Don't get me wrong, I am not above... I'm not a proud man. I'm not above most things. I'm certainly not above playing Halo 3. I have deliberately not followed the progress of Halo 3 because, as my wife will tell you, Halo 2 sucked so much of my life away. I mean, I just spent days and days and weeks and months playing Halo 2, trash-talking 11-year-olds in Scandinavia, just sitting on my couch, shrieking at people who were still in short pants on the other side of the country because I'd managed to shoot them on screen in a I'm 34 years old. Sitting on the couch, I would be, you know, just so full of myself that I had bested a third grader at a video game. Somebody who didn't even speak proper English. And I'm all, like, up in his face because I was beating him at Halo 2. So I have not even followed the development of Halo 3. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, sir, isn't Halo 3 only going to be for the Xbox 360?
Xbox 360, yeah.
See, that's the thing. I don't have the Xbox 360. But
oh,
I'm going to be... I'm just saying I'm going to be obliged to buy it once Halo 3 comes out. If that's the whole thing of giving me the, you know, give me the blade and then I have to buy the razor.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying I think you should check out the event. I think it's going to be a pretty big thing at the Vancouver Mall.
It's going to be the biggest thing to hit the Vancouver Mall.
Vancouver Mall. It's not the mall you remember.
Thank you.
Oh,
good.
No.
Good callback. What are the events going to consist of, sir?
Well, I know they're going to have an actual try of the game, so people can see it.
Now, hasn't Halo 3, and I know that I'm alienating every single person who's not into Halo while I speak this, but let me just, hadn't Halo 3 been out in beta for a while?
Yeah, they did a beta from, I believe, the 16th of May to the 10th of June.
God damn, it's just so depressing and great that you know the dates like this. You know the data comes out, you know the time, you know the exact date period, you know the window of time during which the beta was up and running. God bless you, sir.
I've had it reserved since it's been available.
Trailing. Every time I look at those 18 to 49 numbers, I thank you, sir. I thank you for helping to create them. All right, well, in any event, so it comes out when? It's September 22nd?
September 25th.
All right, did you play the beta?
I did.
Was it good?
It was good. They had a few problems that they're working on, but all in all, it was a lot better than 2.
All right, excellent. Well, that's a bold statement, my friend, because 2 was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Wait, like I said, wait until you try 3.
All right. Thank you.
Not a problem.
All right, there you go. Let's see. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Hey, Rick. The bananas was the original flavor, but once the people of the Orient during World War II took over, you know, they couldn't ship the bananas, so then they switched to the vanilla.
The people of the where, sir?
The Orient.
When they brought in their gongs and things?
Okay, yes.
Their gongs and their chopsticks?
So what happened? So then... Yeah, I'm sorry, just start this whole story again. I wasn't even listening.
You know, the people of the Orient, so no more bananas. So Twinkie actually had to go with vanilla, which comes mostly from Africa.
So confused about this. What did the people in, now quoting your call, sir, what did, quote, the people in the Orient have to do with the flavor of Twinkies?
Well, bananas. Where does most of the bananas come from?
South America. Orient.
And Latin America.
Yeah. Guatemala. I was going to say South America.
Back in World War II, it came from the Oriental people.
I think you're making this up. I don't think that's true, sir.
No, it's true. I'm a fat guy. I know my Twinkies.
How could it be that the bananas didn't rot on the way from the Orient to get here?
I don't understand. I was to understand. Now, look, I'm not a bright man, but I was to understand that most bananas and banana-type products, for instance, plantanos, plantains, came from South America. They came from...
The Banana Republic.
Yes, exactly. Came from Brazil, places like that.
Not during World War II.
Was there a...
They just forgot about
that
South America.
That doesn't make any sense.
So that was their own Pearl Harbor.
This was the hostess's Pearl Harbor.
Yes.
The fear is right here in the hostess plant.
It was a sad day in the Twinkie world.
Okay, I'm not trying to pick fights with you. I'm just saying, why...
He's leaving his vehicle. He's had enough.
I'm going to go find me a Twinkie right now.
No, but during World War II, why would we no longer have stopped getting... Is there a reason we couldn't get bananas from South America during World War II?
I don't know.
You're making this entire thing up.
I think they were our allies.
Because you know that we don't know any better.
No. Rick, you're smarter than that.
I'm really not. Okay, so it is your theory that the reason we switched to cream filling instead of banana filling in Twinkies during World War II is because, again, in your words, the people from the Orient quit giving us bananas.
Exactly.
Okay, then. Thank you, sir. Are you going to get a Twinkie right now?
Actually, I am.
All right, excellent.
Enjoy it.
He's in Malala.
Malala is the land of the Twinkie. Have yourself a chocodile while you're at it, too.
I don't know what that is.
It's great. A chocodile is like a ho-ho, kind of. All right, thank you, sir. God bless you.
Thank you, bud.
All right, thank you. I don't think that's historically accurate information.
I'm going to do some research when my computer comes back.
You kids are out of school and listening to this program for your intellectual sustenance. Would be wise not to model yourself on that caller. Hello, Rick Emerson Show.
Hello.
Hi.
Now I want a freaking Twinkie.
Yeah.
Calling about video games, actually, though.
Yes,
I wanted to say that there's nothing wrong with being intimately involved with any sort of video game. I mean,
does that involve some special kind of suit or like a Visqueen covering?
Sounds like he's
exactly.
Had some special time for Tomb Raider one too many times.
Somebody's never really that big of a
somebody's
fan.
Played a little too much Leisure Suit Larry, yes.
Yeah.
Yes?
Sorry, I just completely forgot what I was going to say.
It's okay. You take all the time in the world. We'll just sit here while you regain your train of thought.
Take a break and have a Twinkie.
Goodness, that could take many hours. I'm not going to do that to you.
Here, go ahead and drop the bed for a second, Kristen. All right, did it come back?
No, and I don't know if it's going to necessarily. Sorry.
Thank you. 90 seconds closer to death. Thanks for that. All right, one more, and then we got to do some other things. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello. Always make sure to turn your radio up as loud as you possibly can. How long do you suppose it's going to take this person to realize that they're on the air?
I give it a minute.
This is really weird. This always kind of freaks me out, actually, to hear my own voice coming back to me over the phone, especially when you realize that... This broadcast that you are now hearing is going to be going out over the air again.
Into outer space, where aliens can hear it 50,000 years from now while they're watching Lucy
reruns. Kind of positioning yourself between two mirrors and looking at your reflection.
It's totally what it is. It really is. It's like some weird auditory Escher painting.
Turn that radio up. Up.
Always make sure to turn your radio up as loud as you possibly can.
I think they're just screwing with us. I don't even think they're going to answer the phone now.
They're not going to fall for this.
Now, for the love of God. All right, fine. Goodbye. Jesus. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. I don't even have time to talk about this thing with the Del Monte. I tried all last night. I didn't try all last night. I tried for a good section of last night to pick a fight with my wife about the Del Monte thing.
And did it work?
No, it didn't. She was like, I need to go to sleep. I don't have time to fight about illegal immigration. It's like I went home and I had no one to fight with. Just walking around the house, trying to pick fights with the dog. That didn't work. But we will come back and read this press release from the Del Monte people, in which the Del Monte company refers to the huge raid at their factory as being, quote,
social visit.
Exactly.
The coffee flash. Ball.
A cotillion. An immigration
visit.
Kind of like how I had an automotive visit when those guys took my 4Runner.
Sounds awfully happy.
It really does. Like they all had crumpets.
time. Back after this with Lisa Goddard. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. You stay right there. We will continue. You stay right there. Emerson radio program. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Scotty, is this you typing this question on the screen, or is this somebody asking you this question, which you are then conveying to me? Or is this something you want me to ask Lisa Goddard? Oh, for the love of... So difficult to tell what goes on in that guy's mind. Well, you let me know. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the hills. CNN Radio Forest, Father to the Stars, the fashionably attired and dangerously witty Lisa Goddard. Why, hello there.
Well, hello to you.
How are things? How's life? How would you rate your existence on a classic 1 to 10 scale today?
I'd give it a solid 7.
Now, is that personal, professional, or a conflagration? No, not conflagration.
Conflagration.
Not a conflagration. It is a confluence? No, that's not... A confluence is that Aristotle thing. What is the,
A collage?
Not a collage.
A C word? I'm trying to find a C word for you.
You know, sometimes you just
Buttery
hand me these...
and average?
You just hand me these setups that I can't even take. No, a collage is like a pastiche. It is a conflation. You know, conflation's a word that nobody really used until a couple years ago, and then everybody started using it, like gravitas. And I don't even really know what conflation means. I just feel compelled to use it because everybody else does.
Are you sure you don't mean conflagration?
No, that's a fire.
Right.
Well, no, because a conflagration of your personal and private life, I suppose, would be interesting, but maybe not necessarily good.
Well, yeah, it would make for good radio.
I guess I can't really tell. Maybe you are having a conflagration of your private and personal life. Maybe you and Ted Turner are carrying on a... You and Ted Turner are having some sort of torrid affair. I don't know.
See, you're really schooling me. Your conflation, apparently the process of fusing items into one entity.
That's what I'm saying. That's the word I was looking for, and I kind of contextually knew what it meant, but I don't think I've ever actually bothered to look it up.
Well done. Well done.
See, so we're all a little bit smarter than we were when we started this phone call.
Yes, we are.
Fantastic. Hey, normally, immigration is one of those things that I hate talking about, and it doesn't... I'm not going to say it doesn't have any relevance, but it doesn't. It's not really a thing that hits home with most people, and I still really don't enjoy talking about it, but now it has relevance, because, get this, you'll find this amusing. The day before yesterday, as I mentioned to you, the Del Monte fruit plant here in Portland was raided by the man
right.
who came in because 9 out of every 10 employees there was, you'll never get this, they were agricultural workers, and they were... illegal aliens. We were all stunned by this. And so the man came in, rounded up some brown people, as the man often does. It took some low-level Del Monte managers as well. And I swear to God, the National Del Monte Corporation issued a press release in which they are referring to the, quote, immigration visit at their Portland, Oregon facility as though it was some sort of, like they were all sitting around having a coffee clatch. Anyway.
Pop off.
Here's what I don't understand. It does... I know that there's so much here that it's just impossible to bite off and to chew in just one segment here, but it does seem like large sections of George W. Bush's already diminished base are angry at him about this immigration bill. So, A, am I right about that? And B, if that is the case, politically speaking, why is he bothering with this since it seems to be whittling away at his already sort of squandered support?
It's an interesting area for him. Ever since he was governor of Texas, he has had, honestly, a vision of sort of uniting more effectively, the Mexican and American world. So even though he's very conservative on a lot of things, this is an area that he has been involved with since he was governor. So he does sort of have some street cred here that this isn't sort of out of nowhere. And this may be coming from a deep philosophical place for our president. It's hard to say. I think that the interesting thing is with the Republican Party, there are a lot of businesses, I don't want to mention any fruit companies that might come to mind, but a lot of businesses that really do depend on illegal immigrants for their workforce, and if not illegal immigrants, certainly some kind of seasonal workforce, and they are pushing hard to get this put into law because they don't want to get to a situation where...
Where they have to pay fair market wages.
Down ...and they don't have access to their workforce.
I'm not saying that you are deliberately trying to mislead the people with newspeak, but I will say this. This claim that they rely on an illegal immigrant or, let's say, seasonal or migrant workforce,
right.
That is a little bit, that's a little disingenuous. I believe that's a little misleading.
Okay, great, great. Bring it on. Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's like saying that I rely on a guy, that's like saying I rely on my cousin Lefty to get me hot stereos that he somehow found falling off a truck somewhere.
Well,
I use him to get those. I use him. To get a discount stereo equipment that he stole out of somebody's El Camino, but I don't rely on him because if Lefty went to jail, as he inevitably will, I will just have to go and buy my stereos legally.
Right.
I rely on him only out of convenience and because I don't want to pay a fair market price for those stereos. So Del Monte doesn't really rely on migrant work so much as they find it convenient to have a workforce they can underpay and a workforce that is frightened of deportation and therefore will not ask for fair working conditions.
Right. I mean, I think that argument has its most, is most convincing when you talk about farm workers. And I think that if there were no process by which seasonal workers could come in, if we don't have a guest worker program, there might be a case to be made there that there would be a problem. And that maybe farms don't have the choice that, say, a packaging plant has to try and get illegal immigrants, which are cheaper, versus legal workers, which are more expensive. And a farm environment, I don't know how many, I don't know what their situation is, but it does seem that from the farms that I've spent time on in South Carolina and elsewhere, that there just is not as much of a workforce that is native that they can rely on right now. So I think they've got a real argument there, but who knows? They're certainly gonna sway to their side. But even that argument answers your question, which is why is Bush doing this? It's because of businesses.
I mean
whether you think it's legitimate or not, it's in businesses' interest.
He really is just put between the hardest rock and the hardest hard place here, right? Because on the one hand he's got, and I hate to paint with a broad brush, but that never stops me from doing it. So on the one hand he's got. I'm not saying, how do I put this? On the one hand, he's got, let's say, the extreme right of the Republican Party, who maybe are not known for their tolerance of and or love for people who aren't white. And again, I am not saying that is all right-wingers or all Republicans.
You're protectionist.
No, I'm being very careful to say that the extreme right-wing in this country are not known for embracing cultures different from their own. And I'm not saying that that's the majority, clearly, of people, you know, in the Republican Party. It's not. But there's the extreme right wing who want everybody to be, you know, to be white, male, and straight, and Protestant. And then, you know, so he's got, and that's a lot of his base. So he's got those guys to satisfy. But on the other hand, that's the rock. And then the hard place for George Bush is large businesses who rely upon a subservient and terrified workforce so that they can pay less than market wages. And so Bush is caught between his base and big business, and he's just getting, as my mom used to say, squozing a lot on this.
But I got to speak up for the Scotty J's of the world.
Oh, please.
Scotty. That, you know, his base, I think you are implying that his base is the radical right wing that is a bunch of racists. And I think the truth is more in between, that the base is unhappy about border enforcement. There could be a huge debate over whether racism plays a role in there or not, but there are some who would say they're not racist and they just have a problem with the fact that laws are not being enforced on the border and that the government has had decades to try and do it and has done nothing, essentially. And those are people who, you could call them more protectionist, whatever you wanted to call them, but you're right, those are George Bush's base. I just got to stand up for, I just don't want George Bush's entire base to be called racist.
No, I'm not calling his entire base racist. I'm being very careful to say the extreme right wing.
I'm just being careful. It's funny how we all have to be careful. You know, this is a random thing. The two girls, I rent out my condo in D.C., and my two girls were followed home one night. This is going on a different subject altogether. And this guy actually tried to run into our apartment and try and beat down the door. It's very scary. Speaking highly of my neighborhood yet again.
Of course.
And they sent me an email right away, middle of the night, or actually early the next morning. And they described the guy and say he was medium complexion. And so
what does that mean?
Back, and I said, what does that mean?
He's like a light buttery cocoa?
He's Hispanic? What does that mean? Native American? Asian? What? You know, and they sent that to our whole apartment complex, and everybody was emailing, like, what race was this guy? Why are you guys not saying, you know, and he was a black guy, but they felt really guilty saying that because it's such a stereotype of black people as criminals, and they felt guilty that they actually had an attempted assault.
You know, people in this country are just, I mean, and I am like the king of white liberal guilt. Sarah Dillon and I had this whole discussion the other day about how, and now we really are off point, but you know what, this is one of those things that people are talking about, both in the specific and the abstract today. I told the story about, this was years ago, I was flying from, God, somewhere to some other place, I forget where, but I was at some airport somewhere, and I'm sitting there, I was going to a business meeting. I was in one of my many periods of radio unemployment, trying to get a job, and I'm sitting there, and I'm on my way to the meeting, and I'm dressed relatively well, but I got these shoes, and I realized my shoes are just scuffed all to hell. And I'm like, well, I can't go in looking like I'm just some transient. Okay, I got to get my shoes taken care of. So, and you can see what's going a mile away. I'm at the airport, and I go to get my shoes shined. And I'm sitting there, and it's not like it's just some dude setting up shop. I mean, he has a license, and he's clearly, you know, employed, not employed by the airport, but he clearly has a, you know, he has bought space and has a gig at the airport shining shoes. So I'm sitting there, and there is an older black man shining my shoes, you know, one might even say an elderly black man shining my shoes. And I'm sitting there, and like Charles Atlas supporting the weight of the world, the liberal guilt on me, a white man sitting there having a black man three times my age shining my shoes, and I swear to God, it was all I could do not to just break down crying and just like, and I'm so sorry, I don't mean to be white and have you shine my shoes. And I just felt so bad just because I am just such a bleeding heart about so many things. That being said, sometimes you just gotta say stuff that's true, and you gotta, you know, and if you're looking for a suspect who's white, that's fine. If you're looking for a suspect who happens to be black, that's fine, doesn't matter, whatever. You just gotta say it. My thing is this business about illegal immigration. Look, there are all kinds of people who have problems with illegal immigration, quite separate from the race of the immigrant. That being said, I do also believe, and I'm thinking of my in-laws here, as I often do, there are all kinds of people in this country whose problem with illegal immigration is augmented and exacerbated by the fact that they also don't like the color of the person who is immigrating.
Well, I think that is true, and I think it gets really confusing because also there's the language issue, and some people be like, well, it's not the race, it's the language. I wish they'd learn English, you know, and then you just get into this really weird gray area where people are not clear on exactly why they believe what they believe or why they're reacting, but everyone's reacting so emotionally.
Yeah.
It gets really cloudy.
All right. Well, so the bottom, I mean, to what extent you can even read tea leaves on this, where is this whole thing? I don't even know what the status of the immigration bill is. I heard it was dead, and then I heard it was back, and then I don't even know where it is now.
I know. I'm so glad you asked. All right. Here's the thing. I'm going to try and keep this simple. Basically, this whole thing fell apart because a bunch of Republicans, a couple of Republicans who didn't want it to go anywhere, were objecting to every single amendment, and then other Republicans wanted a chance to offer their amendment. So it just got to be a nightmare. And in the end, the Democrats pulled the bill because they felt like they weren't getting anywhere, and the Republicans were not allowing the bill to go forward, essentially. So now what's happening at this very moment, there is a group of senators huddling together, trying to work out a deal for exactly what amendments will get votes, like what changes to this bill will get votes, essentially what ideas will get a chance on the floor of the Senate. And it looks like they're very close to a deal. If they work out that deal, we hear it maybe today, then I would expect the immigration bill to come back next week, and we'll see what happens then.
Oh, fantastic. Let's just be honest. The Democrats just pulled the bill out of reflex, right? That's just a muscle memory thing. That's what they do. When in doubt, the Democrats just retreat. I don't know. What are we going to do today? Let's give up. And that's just, I mean, that is sort of what you do when you're a Democrat. So.
Well, you know, they did have that one. They had a good moment last year where they
what a sad statement.
That is messed up. That's not good.
The Democrats had that great thing they did last year.
The way I wanted it to.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But they really went toe to toe with Bill Frist, and they shut down the Senate, and they were pretty feisty.
Yeah. Uh huh. All right. You know, you sound a lot like the Chicago Cubs when you talk that way. Remember that one time?
Oh no.
Yeah, that one time 84 years ago when we did that thing.
The Cleveland Cavaliers, how about that?
Yeah, exactly. The Utah Jazz, take your pick. Remember that, or the Seattle, any team from Seattle in any sport. Remember that time we got into the playoffs and almost came close to kind of winning a championship in that one sport, only to have it snatched away at the last minute? Those were good, bad times.
Talk someday about your football team's uniform. For some reason,
the Seattle Seahawks?
It sparks controversy every time it comes up wherever I am watching the Seattle game.
Well, I got a couple minutes if you do. What? Please do explain.
Yeah, well, there seems to be a real dividing line over people who love or hate the Seahawks uniform.
There's no one who loves it. It's ugly.
See, that's what I kind of don't like it, but, you know, the fiance loves it. And I don't understand.
Is he colorblind?
Who loved it?
Is he vision impaired in some way?
I don't know. It's definitely not my favorite.
I mean, I'm just. All right, let's quickly just weigh in here.
I like the team. I love the stadium.
You like the team? You like the Seattle Seahawks? Are you saying you like the Seattle Seahawks just to pander to my audience?
No, I do. I like the team.
People who live here don't even like the Seattle Seahawks.
No, I can back that up.
All right, hold on just a second. Let's weigh in with Kristen Bowie, who's filling in for Sarah Dillon. Chris, are you from here?
Yes.
Okay, how do you feel about the Seahawks?
Not so much.
How do you feel about their uniform, aesthetically speaking?
Not so much.
It's a terrible
uniform.
They're
right up there with the Ducks.
Yeah, it's just awful. It's just awful. And, the Seattle Seahawks are just sort of, like, people that, here's the thing. The Seattle Seahawks are sort of like having a disabled loved one that, you know, tries really hard. And you kind of know that they're never going to win, but you sort of feel, it's like on that episode of the Brady Bunch where, Bobby was unable to win anything, and so they took that trophy they found in the basement and they dummied it up to give him a fake trophy so he'd feel like he'd accomplished something. And then he eventually did because he was the 1 millionth customer at the store when he bought Tiger some flea powder, and then they gave him a big ticker tape parade. But I'm saying that's what the Seahawks are like. We just have to sort of give, like, there ought to be, this is my final observation here, there really ought to be three sets of scores up on the scoreboard whenever the Seahawks play. There ought to be, you know, away team, home team, and then a whole separate score for nice try, you know?
Oh, no.
Because then the eventual score would be like 11-0 and like 80, you know?
A for effort.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that really is with the Seahawks. You know, that's the deal. So.
No, they're in my little group because I've got my main team, of course, is the Redskins. I've always been a Redskins fan. And then after that comes New Orleans, which I've always liked since I was a kid, since they were terrible. Mike Ditka, I like that whole era that was awful as well. And you could put New Orleans in the same category, really. But I don't know. I would say the Seahawks are in that next tier for me of teams that I'd like to do well. Maybe the Bears, in general, I'd put in that category as well.
All right. Well, you know, and I get to say that your tote board has gone up exponentially, the audience, for name-checking Mike Ditka today. So my first radio, and I'm not, this is, then I swear we have to be done, but my first radio consultant was a dead ringer for Mike Ditka.
Oh, no kidding. That's great.
His name was Brian Jennings. He used to sit across the table from me and give me these, you know, sort of, not really pep talks, but just give me an assessment of how my show was sounding, which was usually bad, and tell me the hundreds of things I needed to fix. But he looked just like Mike Ditka, and it was so kind of cool and disconcerting, because he'd sit there with, I swear to God, a clipboard, and he'd say, Rick, I'm going to give you the straight lowdown on what you need to do wrong, you know, what you're doing wrong and what you need to do right, and these are the following things you need to address on your radio program. And I swear to God, in my head, he was like shouting into one of those like headsets on the sideline going, we need a nickel defense! You know, it was so weird. So, all right, there you go. And we're done. Okay, I'm sure are you on tomorrow?
I'm off tomorrow.
Oh, for the love of God.
Ah.
Come on, is it Bob Costantini?
Probably Noodles. I'm not sure. You know, I called my boss this morning and said, hey, you know, I've got tomorrow off. And he said, oh, yeah. So I don't know.
Do you have let me ask you this, and I know I keep saying this is the final thing, but I know that, like, for instance, McCarthy's on a regular rotating schedule. Are your days off not random, but, I mean, are they the same days off all the time?
No, they're pretty random.
So there's just no way to tell. We're just spinning a magic eight ball with you.
Yeah, you don't know.
All right. Well, if I don't talk to you again, which I probably won't, enjoy your weekend. We will have speaks with you soon, as the British say, and enjoy your Washington, D.C.
Excellent.
Weekend.
All right. And happiness to both.
All right. Best to the Sporber.
Okay. Yeah,
all right. There you go. Thank you. There you go. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen, on the Hill. Fantastic. Let's get the. Really? Well, okay. Just so I can play the sounder. Hold on. Wait. Just give me one damn second here. Where the hell did I put. Where the hell did I even put this sounder? Hold on, Schwartz. Oh, here we go.
One big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.
I'm hoping to talk to Lisa personally, Rick.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't blame
you for hoarding her, actually. So, hey, I wanted to ask her about three things. One was, would she be open to an interview, an in-depth interview about the life and times of...
Do you want me to answer these questions as though it was Lisa?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hello? And also, how does she feel about the Washington judge that's going to sue a Korean laundry for $50 million?
Oh, I love that guy. That's the best story. Tim, do we have anything on that judge suing the Koreans who are doing it, lost his pants?
I think we did that yesterday.
I'm pretty sure. Well, you may have done it in the afternoon. I don't think we talked about it
on
the
show. And he's right there in Washington, so I wanted to get her take on it. And then thirdly, I wanted to ask her what she thought about Democratic Senator Harry Reid of Nevada, who said that he wanted to work on the undocumented American issue. That's what he calls the illegal aliens now.
Did he really call them undocumented Americans?
Yes, sir.
God damn, I hate people.
I just wanted to call it in just to get you started.
Use of our English language. I mean, less people think that this is a political thing. I mean, I'm gonna quit giving my whole sort of preamble about what a big bleeding heart most of us on this program, except for Scotty. I think I can speak for Craig. Are you a big bleeding heart?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Whatever.
You saw me dancing around when Congress got elected in.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter. Whatever. And it doesn't mean I'm some, like, reflexive. I mean, I'm certainly not a Democrat, because Democrats are useless. So I'm going to quit giving that preamble, because it sounds like I'm trying to justify stuff. I'm just saying, people kind of know where we come from in the show. But goddamn, just this abuse of the English language has got to stop.
It's not double speak. It's triple or quadruple speak.
Undocumented Americans.
That doesn't even make sense.
It doesn't. It's just linguistic. It's like Native Americans. It's just linguistically incorrect. At least we could all use the language that we have agreed on. We could use the words in the dictionary the way that they're put in there, for the love of sweet Christ Almighty.
So perhaps, please, to maybe ask her next time and see what she thinks.
I'll ask her on Monday. Harry Reid, that guy's just a big ball of fun anyway.
Yeah, and then also, please to be considering that 20 to 30-minute interview about the life and times and the background of her whole experience on this planet Earth.
Yeah, I'll get right on that. That won't sound creepy. All right, thank you.
Not at all.
Bye now. All right. Well, we got this call about Tim, but Tim's not here. Let me just wait a second and see if he arrives. No, you'll have to wait. So stay on hold. We'll get your call about Tim here in just a few. 503-733-2970. Back after this with the AM 970 Noon News Hour. You're just moments away from experiencing Tim Riley. Don't go anywhere. Live from Portland, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. Just a moment, we have Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth. Later on, Jim Roop's going to join us to talk about the unfolding ball of crazy that is Phil Spector. Phil Spector's not taking very good care of his wig, by the way. As much as he was looking like Mrs. Landingham on the West Wing, he's now starting to look like Mrs. Landingham, sort of left alone in a gutter overnight in a heavy rainstorm, besieged by rats. Just so you know. What else? Later on, top five, Kristen Bowie, who is in for the vacationing Sarah X. Dillon today. Hello, Kristen. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing good.
We didn't really get to do a proper introduction because you were busy tracking down an engineer to fix Tim's computer. So,
thank you, Troy.
God bless you, Troy. Kristen Bowie is filling in today, doing a fine job so far, as she will continue to do throughout the rest of the week. We'll be doing Kristen Bowie's top five albums?
Yes.
All right, so like this is I hate to use this
word. Compromise.
You had to go to a desert island and you had to take five albums with you. So these are your top five albums that we were able to locate. The top five albums that we were able to find in Scotty J's music collection. That'll be coming up later on, as well as some other things. Before we do anything else, let's quickly... Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. How can I help you, sir?
Oh, hi. I just wanted to pay a compliment to Tim. His 7 o'clock news brief last night, I found it to be both concise and funny. It was subtle. I mean, I guess I'm a bit of a liberal. Yes, I was raised Catholic, but... his observations were just spot on, and it was very entertaining and funny too.
Well, that's
why. Thank you.
That's what he does, sir. He executes.
Yeah, just in general. Also, laud you, Rick. I mean, I'm one of these drivers. I know you got many thousand listeners, but after you went off the air back in '05, I was turning around the dial on this kind of lame comedy station. Johnson 970 was on, but I listened because what else are you going to listen to? Dr. Laura or Lars or something? So I listened to it and I found it a little bit funny occasionally, but then quickly realized it's just a comedy loop. You know this, but less than 2 years here, what you've built is a station. I mean, the Onion news briefs, Right after 10 in the afternoon, you know, it's as though you have a presence through the whole day. You've got a Miller on the right, a Miller on the left that precedes you. You're balanced. It's just, then Don and Mike, if I'm working late, you've turned it into a great station.
Here's what I'd like you to do now is just to build a large golden statue of me in the center of the town. Around.
I want to say seriously, though, I have a life, and I was actually too embarrassed to say I was a Rick Emerson listener. I'm sorry. When I went to Pirates Tavern with my daughter, and they asked me, how'd you hear about it? Because actually, like, I'm really into my life. I'm not a fanboy. But you made this station great.
Oh, wait, no. Hold on. No, you've gone one step too far. What did you say? When you went to the Pirates Tavern, a fine advertiser on the Rick Emerson show and
yes.
the station.
As everyone should go.
When they said, how did you hear about this? What did you say?
I'm embarrassed to admit, I simply said, a friend of mine said he'd be...
No. You did everything right till that point.
You had us for so long, and then now it's all come asunder.
I know, but may I say, listen, I was drinking Visa like 5 years ago, but now I'm also, I went out to the Everybody's Garden Center because my girlfriend wanted some plants. I mean, I can actually think of more sponsors that I do.
What lie did you tell them? Did you say you heard it on Lars?
No, they didn't ask.
Okay.
I mean,
all right. Well, do me a favor. You go back to Pirate Tavern at some point. You tell me you heard it here, my friend, and all will be forgiven.
Try to get over that as long as I can very quickly say, Rick, that I know you don't like basketball. You're not into the Blazers. I know that. I figure you're not.
Yes, sir.
But in about 3 or 4 years, you will know the last name of the starting five, whether you like the team or not. So all the secret Emerson listener Blazer fans, word up, man. We're going to win a lot of titles in about 3, 5, 7 years. Everyone knows it.
All right. Thank you, sir.
And I don't like that squiggly decal they use from the 70s. It looks like a Screen Gems presentation.
Totally. You're right about that.
Like, I don't know what that's supposed to mean or who designed it, but it's like 30 years old.
It's like the Trailblazers, a Quinn Martin production.
Yeah.
United Artists presents the Trailblazers. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please make way for the greatest newsman in the history of all humanity? It's Tim Riley.
Oh. I'm sorry.
Where's this from? Well, it's fun to play. This is like back when the old podcast.
No, this is my fault. She asked me which sounder it was. Which one is this? What is this called?
A News Open.
Well, this will do.
I'm sorry,
I think
Tim.
Tim Open.
Oh, don't worry about it.
I think it might be A Tim Open. You want to try the other one, Tim?
No, this is fine. All Let's get underway.
Here's Tim Riley, kids.
Well, thanks for those nice comments. Yes, we have news that you won't hear anywhere else. Afternoons during the Like You Show. It is not rewritten wire copy like you heard on the radio station. It is not something out of the Oregonian.
No, it's actual. It's brand new spanking news.
And most of the stuff I just turn on the microphone and make it up and go for about 90 seconds.
You don't spend hours recording and then deleting it by mistake?
No, I don't. It's a one-take thing. It's, what's recorded stays there.
Yes, for some of us. Your face, Scotty.
Now, Scotty did a good job.
Uh-huh.
We're not here to pick on Scotty.
Yeah, I'll be nice to Scotty.
Maybe you're not. Speak for yourself, Kemosabe. All right.
Anyway, let's begin at the beginning. A Washington judge has denied Scooter Libby's appeal to delay his 2.5-year prison sentence. But he'll be pardoned anyway.
It's true.
It's going to be the end of that. Then a woman faces a $10 million bail after being accused of an attack on the niece of Mayor Potter. Now, according to these court documents, Brooke Winter duct-taped her live-in girlfriend, Tawny Potter, to a chair, held a gun to her head, and threatened murder-suicide. Documents said it happened this month at the couple's southeast Portland home. Tawny Potter says she was held for 3 hours.
Tawny, is that T-A-W-N-Y?
No, T-A-W-N-E-E.
She sounds really sophisticated.
She's very tawny.
Yeah, she sounds really upper class.
Mm-hmm. Winter faces a charge of first-degree kidnapping, unlawful use of a weapon, coercion, and harassment.
What's the girlfriend's name? Brooke?
Brooke.
Tawny and Brooke, they really sound like a couple of sophisticated, don't they?
They do.
All right. Your friend Marissa.
Well, a tradition for graduating seniors at Sprague High School in Salem is wearing on county road officials, upsetting law enforcement and costing taxpayers hundreds of dollars. A big booyah showed up this week along Kubler Boulevard. They spelled it out booyah. B-O-O-Y-A-H.
Booyah. Jim Cramer out there?
Yes.
He's not. Never mind.
Never mind. Never mind.
No, he's not anywhere right now.
Yeah.
Not anywhere important. Or any channel anybody's watching.
Well, you
watching.
Know, Salem's not that important. So.
Did you see that website where they have Jim Cramer's stock picks, and then they have like a monkey's stock picks where the monkey picks things at random?
No.
And the monkey's beating Jim Cramer like 6-1. All right, I didn't say that. Here's Tim Riley. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So apparently, it's been a tradition to paint sayings in the street in Salem for 30 years now. It costs a lot, says Marion County Public Works. A lot of money. Since the tradition began, the cleanup tab is usually over $20,000. I think that's a big lie. Which includes last year's prank when students layered the paint on so thick that the county had to completely repave part of the road.
Oh, please, cry me a river.
It cost $12,000 in the parish to build. It's basically a property crime to all the taxpayers.
You know, you should be glad.
Booyah.
Kids even know how to spell, seriously. I mean, in Salem, I mean, you can't just sort of take those things for granted in that part of the state either. So there.
We're seniors, said one student. Give us a break. I think we should.
Well said.
Well, there's a wave of car prowls going on in nice areas of Washington County. It's going to stop because that's where I live. 90 vehicles in Cedar Hills, Rock Creek, and Bethany areas have been targeted by thieves since the beginning of the month. And they're not even breaking windows to get in because the trusting neighbors leave the windows open.
I remember when you could just go off and leave your whole front door unlocked and the popcorn with a nickel.
Now, some shoes were taken from these cars.
Uh-oh.
Another family lost an entire diaper bag.
Who steals a diaper bag from Bethany?
That is
the most suburban crime I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do tonight? Well, I'm going to go to Bethany and steal a diaper bag out of a Taurus. That's just the most suburban.
A Taurus would be a lower class one.
I'm sorry. I can't really. I'm having to.
That would be a Lexus.
Would it now?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, Mr. Upper Crust. You know,
the Taurus is from Hillsboro, don't you know?
No, it's true. And I will say this, actually. I'll just say this. I will say that there are, by my last count, there are five, just off the top of my head, there are five people that I work with, not on a daily basis, but I work with pretty regularly here at CBS, all of whom live in Bethany, three of whom drive Lexi. So that is, there is this one, there's this one two-block area of Bethany
mm-hmm.
where, I swear to God, it's like half the CBS Portland workforce, which is like I wasn't invited. When I moved,
I'll drive you around. I know a lot of the locals there.
I'm just saying, it's like everybody who works here lives in Bethany, except for like Sarah and Kristen and myself. You know, everybody who lives in Bethany or some equivalent thereof. I feel like my invitation was lost in the mail somehow. So very good, Scotty. Totally doing it. I'll be taking these Huggies and any cash you got. Yeah, well done, raising Arizona. Thank you, Scotty. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello. And, you know, they need diaper bags in Bethany because people there just shove out children like there's so many microwave burritos.
That isn't true. Not more than two, usually 1.3 children.
No, it's true. You know, like Eggo's out of a toaster oven. Kids in that neighborhood, I mean, in Bethany,
they have to go to an Ivy League school. You got more than two, they'll have to send them to community college.
No, in Bethany, it's just like miniature versions of their parents. It's like big white people dressed from the Gap. Trailing like a mom and her little ducks, trailing like six or seven little white people dressed from the Gap.
Is that all white people?
In Bethany? I thought Bethany was exceedingly white.
No, it's exceedingly wealthy, and there are people from India living there. In other small third world countries.
This is why, see, you are the official Bethany ambassador. See, this is why you are the. This is like how Scotty is.
They don't let people like us over there, Rick,
no,
so he has to be.
No,
so I'm the Orico Candace Barn representative. I live to the left of that. I lived on the other side of Cornell.
I was just so Scotty is the official spokesperson for the gay community, as we learned, and I will speak for Southeast. Tim will speak for Tannisbourne. Susan will speak for Bethany. We'll have Susan Reynolds speak for Bethany. All right. Well, there you go.
She's almost a neighbor.
I'm just saying, the few times that I've been through there, it's just the palest community. Really, I mean, the people there are almost translucent. What am I doing here? Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Rick, I got a great deal for you on some stolen diapers.
Thank you, sir.
No, I wanted to talk about the double and triple speak. You're talking about the undocumented Americans.
Yeah.
And some years ago, I was working in a big company here, and, you know, we had a bunch of different people from different nationalities and whatnot.
Yes, sir.
And there was a Mexican girl on the assembly line, and she was, I mean, her parents were Mexican. She herself was from Mexico. But I watched as a manager one day referring to her, trying to stumble over his words so that he didn't want to use the non-PC term or whatever. And I don't know if he couldn't conjure up the word Hispanic or what, but he actually referred to her as that young lady of Spanish descent.
Well, and it's all very confusing because this really just becomes like a Bill Moyers PBS special at some point when we start talking about this. But really, none of these terms. They're all inaccurate. None of them make any sense. They're all just made up. It's like the word Caucasian. That's another one. I don't know. You get me started on the word Caucasian, which is a made up term. It means nothing. Caucasian is not a scientific. You see that on police reports even. Although you see it in textbooks sometimes. He's a Caucasian. Caucasian is a made-up goddamn word. It doesn't mean anything. It has no scientific meaning.
Well, there is Caucasia.
I'm not from the south, the southern portion.
I'm from
Russia.
My people are from the capital of Caucasia. Caucasia, which is just a land where everybody wears a lot of khakis and sits around watching Alias.
I'm a German, Irish, Danish, Polish, American.
Yeah, all right.
Whatever.
I know. Yeah. The people, the proud people of Caucasia, land of mayonnaise and Grey's Anatomy. The Caucasian company, I don't even want to go into it. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It's a made-up term.
It's like Kwanzaa.
Yes, it is, actually. Completely, entirely. At least Kwanzaa, they admit, is made up. All right. The term Caucasian comes from the Caucasus Mountains in the Georgia area of what was the former Soviet Union. So there you
I'm
go.
I'm shocked you didn't even go to Wikipedia for that one.
No, it's true. It's just one of the, it's just Caucasian is one of those terms that bugs me because it's fabricated, and then it was a fabricated term made up by this guy. I don't want to go into a whole long
Who's
thing
the guy
about
that
it,
yet made up the word Caucasian?
His name is, not an archaeologist, but sort of an anthropologist named Blumenberg. He was a German, unsurprisingly, a German who discovered a whole bunch of skull fragments and human remains in the Caucasus Mountains in the Georgia area of Russia. And I swear to God, I am not making this up. He deduced from looking at a bunch of pieces of bone in the Caucasus Mountains that there was, and of course he's German, so you know this part's coming. He was convinced that, wait for it, there was a race of white Aryan supermen who came from the Caucasus Mountains area of Russia. And he then termed this race of supermen Caucasians. That's where the term Caucasians come from. It made up by a guy who was convinced that there were Aryan supermen who came from Georgia, Russia. That's where the term Caucasian comes from. It's a made-up, bogus, completely unscientific term that people continue to use to sound smart. It's completely fabricated. It means nothing. As Ben Kingsley would say in Searching for Bobby Fischer, they mean nothing. All right, I'm done. Here's Tim Riley.
Jesus. Well, let's talk about news of authentic American, shall we?
Real American.
Paris Hilton is moving on up, as they used to say back in the 70s. L.A. County Sheriff Spokesman Steve Whitmore says Hilton has been transferred to the Twin Towers Medical Facility. That's back from there to the Central Regional Detention Center.
Paris Hilton's medical condition is stable. She was moved last night at 10:55 p.m. to the Century Regional Detention Facility. Ms. Hilton is now being housed in CRDF's medical clinic, where her condition will continue to be monitored.
She's moving to a medical facility in one of the Twin Towers where Saruman will throw her to the roof using his long staff.
So it says here, instead of sharing a building with close to 200 dingbats, she'll enjoy the comforts of a private room in the medical clinic.
Does it really say that?
Yes.
That's genius. Dingbats.
Now this wing only holds 15 dingbats.
A dingbat is like a widget. What you need is you need to hold this paper towel rack up with one of these there dingbats.
Hilton Zoo 12x8 pad is an upgrade from the Mad Scene over Twin Towers, which have 198 beds on three floors, many of which were occupied by crazy inmates.
I wonder if a dingbat is crazier than a wingnut.
You'd have to ask Archie Bunker about that.
Boy, you know, this is just fantastic.
Really, the news just gets better every day.
It really
That's
does.
That's why I keep this job, God.
Sorry. For today. Dingbats and wingnuts. Oh, my. All right. Fantastic.
The sheriff's spokesman said if Hilton's condition improves, she'll once again be moved back into a cell.
The next step, if it continues going well, she'll be moved back into the same module as before. Not necessarily the same cell.
You know, there's no victory here until she gets thrown into Gen Pop, as they say in Oz. Until she's released to the general population, nobody's really going to be happy, because that's what everybody wants. I mean, whether they will admit it or not, we will speak openly about those things, those shameful thoughts that most Americans decide to keep inside. We are hoping she will go into general population and then be put into the mess hall, where things will take their natural course, and what has to be done will be done.
Gen Pop? Wasn't that a song by Hanson?
Gen Pop. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi, this just in from the land of Caucasia. People from the Orient or Oriental don't like bananas.
All right, no, that's not appropriate, sir.
I'm sorry.
Apologize now to everybody.
No, man.
We're done. No. Wah, wah.
All right.
I'm not done with the Paris Hilton story yet.
Well, yeah, we're not even done with the Paris Hilton news with something that wasn't even amusing. You're going to interrupt Paris Hilton news. It's got to be funnier than that. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, Paris left the Twin Towers last night. She begged the deputies to pray for her.
Yeah.
Hilton left the deputies, who treated her well. She was petrified about leaving them and returning to the Linwood jail. As for why she was petrified, she said she almost had a nervous breakdown at Linwood.
All right. I'm sorry. It's so horrible that you said you almost had a nervous breakdown. And without even thinking about it, my just instinctive response is to laugh. Where she almost had a nervous breakdown, and you know, and immediately I just chortles and guffaws come out of my mouth. Didn't even really think about it. It's just my natural. It is just my reflexive reaction at this point. Hi. Oh, God, I can already sense this is going to be one of those days. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. It's even older than splicing tape. Isn't it? Didn't that refer to the printing character that was inserted?
That's a wing ding.
Now, Wingding is the current font.
God. So, wait, hold on. So, now we're talking about... Let me understand this. Now we're talking about dingbats, wingdings, wingnuts, and you, which one of these are you talking... Are you talking about...
Dingbats.
And you're saying, oh, God, this is, my brain is already... I can feel my brain just sort of slowing down. What? And you're saying a dingbat is what?
Back in the days of linotype machines, they used to have a dingbat was a special character inserted in the text, which was not in the normal selection. They created it variable ones, and they were used to refer down to like footnote centers.
Like an asterisk?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you just use an asterisk?
Well, we use an asterisk the first time, and then once you run out of other special characters, you go to the dingbats.
This is becoming much too cerebral.
More formally known as a printer's ornament.
Okay, whatever. I honestly don't know whether this is stupid or brilliant. This conversation is either really, really, really brainy or really just unbelievably pointless. Maybe some combination of the two. I do feel like, you know what it is? I feel like we're on that wait, don't tell me show on NPR. All right.
Well, I'm a little older than you are, Rick, and it's an earlier form of geek. That's all.
All right, I'm just...
Wingdings are a form of dingbat fonts.
So wingding is a type of a... Okay. Wingding is a type of a dingbat, says Kristen.
A ring ding is an East Coast ding dong.
Bam!
Like tasty cakes?
There you go. As always, Tim Riley takes it to the mountain and back again. Thank you, sir.
Do wop, travel, have a ding dong.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to do the rest of the show in ipsum lorem talk. All right. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Two 10-year-old boys from McMinnville who made that amazing discovery finding a fossilized mammoth tooth are going to be on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno to show it off on Friday. They're going to be the guests the same night as Bill Cosby and Avril Lavigne. This tooth of a woolly mammoth is between 12,000 and 15,000 years old.
Oh, look at... Somebody's clarifying that Edith Bunker was a dingbat. Paris Hilton is a wingnut. All right, thank you. Okay.
Oh, this is a very bad thing. The president's approval rating among his fellow Republicans has dropped below 30%, the lowest mark ever.
I thought it was at like 23% or something a couple weeks ago.
Well, that's the mood of the general country. It's below
20%. Oh, I see. This is in Republicans.
This is in Republican land.
Oh, wait. Is this a Bushwatch?
I guess it is.
Right,
yes.
Do we have the Bushwatch open? Ladies and gentlemen, here's your Bushwatch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Show. That's my book. Life is hard, that's the price of fame. When you're president, everyone knows your name. Hey, what's that say? It's my book. I can't believe he's actually in the White House. That's our world. Tim Riley with your Bush Watch.
So, among Republicans, Bush's approval rating is just 29%. That's a drop of 6 points since April that represents the lowest mark ever. This is according to an NBC Journal poll. Also in the poll, only 23% approve of the job that Congress is doing, a decline of 8 points since April.
You know, these polls just mean nothing because...
No, they're kind of fun, though.
I mean, no, it is. No, that warms my heart. Don't get me wrong. I don't care if they're true. Like with most things on this program, I don't care if the news is real or not. I don't care if this... People will sometimes call up and, you know, I don't believe your newsman gives an accurate and thorough dispensation of the facts. I do believe that sometimes... I had some guy yesterday, somebody, some email, he was all, as the kids would say, all up in my grill... Because we had some of the we had the facts wrong about like whatever it was, something about the Del Monte raid or whatever, and he was like, this just proves your total disregard for the as though we ever had a regard for the facts to be, but no. Facts just get in the way of amusement and entertainment value. So
we don't have time for that.
No, you know? No.
We got a 3-hour show here to do.
Serious. Was that meta humor right there?
I don't know.
Oh man. I don't know what the hell I was talking about. Anyway, but if I expect you to issue a retraction. Do you ever admit that you're wrong? The answer is no. I can answer to spare you the. I can spare you from wearing your fingers down to nubs by sending me further emails asking if we will ever retract anything. The answer is no. No, no. Doesn't matter. I don't care how wrong we are. We got things to do.
We don't have any retraction music.
No, there's... we lack sufficient wingdings or whatever the hell it is to... Or no, a wingding is a party. Yeah, isn't a wingding a party? What was I talking about earlier? I was talking about wingdings.
I stay home every night.
I swear to God.
Wingdings a font.
All right, this is starting to go off into
obscurity.
It's becoming some weird Danny Kaye scene here with the flagon and the dragon and the brew that is true and the castle and the passel or whatever the hell. Blah, 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 blah. So I don't even care if these stories about George Bush's approval ratings are made up, which they probably are. And here's the other thing. The other reason that you can tell that it's a made-up story is when they say, well, the most Americans disapprove of the work that Congress is. I talk to Lisa Goddard every single day, or Bob Costantini. I talk to people from CNN 5 days a week. I have no idea what Congress is doing. I couldn't... You put a gun to my head, I couldn't tell you what Congress is doing
over
the day.
All congressmen... And representatives and politicians in general do is engage in the activity of getting elected, and then they don't do anything for a few months, and then they start to get reelected again.
Yeah, it's just a whole lot of franking of letters.
Nothing is done.
That's it. That's all.
Nothing is accomplished.
Oh, and Scotty's pointed out that I'm confusing a winding with a shindig. I can't even talk now. My mouth won't even form the words. This is like that time that Clyde and I were sitting around talking about. We were coming up with a list of words that in and of themselves were not funny, but if you were intoxicated, would become hilarious, such as gazebo and macadamia. And I sort of got the... Not that I advocate this, because your body is the temple of Jesus, but the next time perhaps you are enjoying some sort of an intoxicant or any sort of a chemical that may, in fact, that may augment or alter your perception of reality, as Aldous Huxley would say.
You got viso?
Yes. Just start saying, like, macadamia, gazebo, and bouffant to yourself over and over again, and I swear to God, you'll wet yourself within 5, 8, 9 minutes. All right.
Speaking of that, the people who were supposed to clean my gazebo yesterday gave up before finishing the job, but that's something for another time.
Life in Tanisborn is hard, Tim. I'm sure the people who are currently living in what used to be the shining city of Baghdad share your pain. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, the Comedy Central premiered its first episode of the new animated show, Little Bush, last night.
Putting Paris Hilton in jail. Come on. Look, judges, kids need time to grow up and make some mistakes. Maybe that means smoking or drinking or snorting an 8-ball off the bathroom floor while your dad accepts a vice presidential nomination. But sooner or later, kids always grow up.
I didn't see it.
I'd say it around age 40.
This big copyright 2004 Court and Fat Boy. I mean, seriously, do they... I hope the KUFO is getting royalties for that, since I heard that, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, whenever it is according to Fat Boy started doing George Bush Boy President. So have we talked? Has anybody asked them about that?
No. Should I bring it to their attention?
I wonder if it's a sore subject. I wonder if we shouldn't bring it up.
What do I call him, Fat Boy or Mr. Boy? Or...
You know, I have tried for so long not to call him Fat Boy because it just seems silly.
He's not really fat.
It's not even that. Well, I mean, not by American
people
standards.
People kind of just resort to fatty when they talk to him. It makes me cringe.
Seriously, calling him fatty, yeah. I'm going to go ask him to go lick a flagpole outside after that. It makes me uncomfortable to call him Fat Boy simply because we're grown men. Mm-hmm. It's not even so much the pejorative aspect of it.
I don't want to call him Boy.
No, I don't. I think you're allowed to call anybody that anymore. Okay. You should try it once. Say, you can either... Well, I've heard people just use the front half and call him fat. Mm-hmm. Pardon me, boy. Can I... No, I don't think it's going to fly. Somebody will be sent back to read the Blue Book again. But we're grown men. I can't call another grown man fat boy. You know, it's like a cage you in. There's that Marty Party guy. I can't call a grown man Marty Party.
Mr. Party?
Pardon me. Yes, I'm...
Radio's embarrassing sometimes.
Radio really is. Radio is just flat out retarded. But his name, I mean, has anybody ever said it? Is his actual name known? I don't know if his parents
know. I don't know if it's known over the air, so.
All right, so I guess I won't say it.
It's a known unknown.
So, thank you. It's a known unknown.
I miss that guy.
Well, whatever. Anyway, his real name is Stupid. So, and he would be the first. No, it's just... Hey, you, Stupid. No, his real name is just sort of silly, which is why he doesn't use it on the air. I'm not trying to turn it into
silly
a whole
boy.
Thing. So, I just started calling him... we were calling him Bruno for a while, and then it became Hector. And none of these really stick. And so I found myself calling him Fat Boy, because that's what it... Because that's what everybody else calls him, and it's the only way to find out where he is. Because if I say, hey, where's Hector? And then I have to go through a whole thing, and I finally have to break down and go, I'm looking for Fat Boy from KUFO. And then they'll go, oh, yeah, he's upstairs. Mm-hmm. It's like how people pronounce Fort as Forte, and I have just quit correcting people. I no longer correct them because they don't know what you're talking about.
We could call him Mr. F.
Mr. F.
Exactly.
Fantastic. That's really good. From Arrested Development. Look at you. All right. Anyway, so Lil Bush is stolen, even if indirectly, from George W. Bush, Boy President, which is done by Corden Fat Boy, evening 7 to 11 or whatever.
So
right,
you feel proud that their version is a lot better.
And their version is way better. So are those weekly radio addresses from The Onion that we play. So anyway, all right.
Meanwhile, back to the Bush Watch. The president calls the summer a critical period in the new security strategy for Iraq.
Caution that the enemies of free Iraq will. Particularly Al-Qaeda and the illegal militias are going to continue their campaigns of terror and intimidation to stop the progress of a free society.
Nancy Pelosi says the troops should be redeployed out of Iraq, but she didn't say that she okayed the financing to keep them there.
To redeploy the troops out of combat in a civil war and into fighting Al-Qaeda, to training the Iraqi troops for force and diplomatic protection in Iraq and to protect our interests in the region.
She always talks much too long.
Yeah, boy, you know, somebody's had the spunk beaten right out of her. Remember how she used to sound? She used to sound all...
Bull marmish.
She used to sound all full of vim and vigor, like she was going to be putting people in her place. She was going to be schooling somebody. You're schooling no one, sister. That's her and her San Francisco values have suffered a serious figurative beatdown, I think. So I love that Democratic Congress that was going to come in and clean house. A new sheriff was in town. They were really going to come in and set that Bush administration straight. No, I didn't.
Nobody does anything.
What? Seriously, what? May I ask? You're already an employee, so I can ask. May I ask how old you are?
I'm 24.
See, I can't ask if you're interviewing, but if you are, if you've already got a job here, I can ask. You still have a little bit of that idea. That'll be beaten out of you.
It's slowly going away.
You still have hope that the Democrats are going to. I lost that hope so long ago.
I've seen a decline since I was 20, kind of till now.
All right. I'm not going to read any more of these wing ding. I can't even say the word now. Wing ding emails. We're going to move on from that. Here's Tim Riley.
The Democrats will not give up.
Our commitment to change the policy in Iraq away from policing a civil war into the far more narrow goal of focusing on counterterrorism is as strong as ever. We think we're gaining ground, and we're going to keep pursuing it until we succeed.
All right. So much for that.
Yeah, I'm done.
That's the end of the Bush Watch.
There's your Bush Watch for whatever for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Show.
He's the president in residence. He's kind of in charge. He's got the whole country saying, that's my bird.
And you know, whatever. I don't really even care. I'm just going to say, you'd think the Comedy Center would have learned last time when That's My Bush got canceled after a season. When That's My Bush, which had problems, but was funny. Not as funny as they wanted it to be, but, I mean, given time to grow, it could have been a great show, and they already canceled that, so I don't hold any hope for... Nothing that starts with Lil is good. That's just a rule. That is a rule on not only in this program,
Lil
but
Kim?
In life. So, you know.
What? What about Lil Kim?
No, it's Lil.
Lil?
Yes, so you're saying little. It's Lil. Is it Little Kim or Lil?
No, it's
Kim.
Lil.
It's
L-I-L.
Lil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kristen,
I can barely say that.
You're our emissary of the young people. It is Lil Kim.
Lil Kim.
Is she the one in jail?
She was in jail.
She was in jail for not snitching, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
She wouldn't talk to the man.
Well, why would you? All right.
Tom is bagging baggy britches.
I don't understand anything that's happening today.
This comes to us from Louisiana, the town of Del Cambra. They've unanimously passed a new law. And Mayor Carol Broussard says he, his name is spelled C-A-R-O-L, but it says here he, will gladly rubber stamp it. If you expose your private parts in our town, you get a fine, says he. Officials face a $500 fine, also risk up to 6 months in jail. Town attorney Ted Ayo said the law adds underwear to his list of what must not be revealed under the state indecent exposure law. This is a new ordinance that deals specifically with sagging pants. If you show off your underwear in public, you're in trouble. Some residents say the new law targets blacks as low-slung trousers are fashionable among those hip-hop fans.
In the hip-hop community.
However, white people are beginning to wear sagging britches, too.
Well, that's got
to
stop. That's just gone one shade too far. I ask this question all the time, and I don't think it's ever going to get answered until we actually have an in-studio Mr. Wizard-style demonstration.
All right. Well, I'm going to answer it again, then.
Here, my question is this, and I ask this understanding that there is no answer. I don't even remember where I was the other day. I was somewhere the other day, and there was some youth. It might have even been at one of our events. It might have been one of the red shirts, one of the street team guys for AM 970. It was some Portland youth walking around, and he's got, you know, the shirt that goes down over his hips or whatever, and then he's got the low slung pants. And how do I put this? So he's wearing jeans, but they are the saggy jeans. Mm. And by looking at where the back pockets were, the back pockets, like where a man might keep his wallet, those back pockets were at, like, the middle of his thigh. Now, logically speaking, if you extrapolate out from that, that means the waistline of said pants were at, like, his, I hate to say this word, let's say the level of his, of the store, his scrotal area. And so, my question, and I ask this sincerely, I'm not trying to be an old guy. I'm not trying to make you get off my lawn, Bob Dole style. Really, I don't understand how the pants stay up.
That's what I was wondering, too.
That's
maybe
the thing.
Buttoxes are lower these days.
Buttoxes. Would you? Have you tried buttoxes?
I've seen people literally, like, pull their belt tighter just to keep their pants up.
You can't cinch your belt around your crotch. That doesn't make any sense, and it wouldn't work anyway.
Well, I think that all started because it made it easier for people to hide their weapons and steal more stuff.
That is your assessment, Kristen Bowie. I am making no such judgment.
Hey, I'm from Gresham. I can judge those things.
Well, I'm not trying to pass judgment as a fashion statement. God knows I wore all kinds of stupid crap in the 80s. As somebody who spent the last week watching Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo, I can tell you the 80s were terrible, all right? It's not like the 2000s have any sort of prize for worst fashion ever. I really, honestly, just as an issue of mechanics, I don't understand how those pants that are slung around your business, where they're right there in the Johnson area, I don't understand how they stay up. Are there suspenders underneath that we can't see?
Oh, that could be.
Are there
to hold up socks?
That's what I'm saying. Like an orthopedic are there suspenders clipped that then go under the shirt that we can't see? I really want to go, and I won't do this for obvious reasons, the next time I see a kid walking along with his pants all sagging down, I really want to go and just yank up the shirt and just look underneath. Like when you want to see how David Copperfield makes the Statue of Liberty disappear. You want to pull back the curtain. I want to go pull up the shirt on one of those kids, and this sounds so inappropriate.
Sounds like something they're having a Catholic church.
And then just find out how... wouldn't it weird you out? What if you pulled up the shirt and you found out that his pants were staying up with no visible means to support? Like it was some sort of supernatural... Yeah, seriously. Like it was some sort of magic. They were just sitting there suspended, you know? It wouldn't make any sense at all. I spent way too much time talking
about it. As long as that person is of an adult age, I'm sure there won't be any problem with it.
Let's break. Right. It's 503-733-2970. It is the Rick Emerson radio program, kids. Not that you've likely confused it with anything else at this point. 503-733-2970. Tim Riley returns. Coming up later on, Jim Roop, the top five and all that. Here's Aerosmith. It is the Rick Emerson radio show. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970 and whatnot. Now I just want to end everything by going.
You're totally right, too. You know,
these people make millions of dollars.
You're the voice talent, and when I say voice talent, I'm not talking about the DJs. I'm talking about the, you know, the big voice guy. Like, we have this guy, Max, who says that, you know, we call Rick now. Pick up the phone. Who says lots of things. He records pages and pages every month of things for you to say. Whoever the big voice person on Kink is, all they say is just Kink after every song, and that's it. And I wonder if that was, did they get a flat fee for that? Are they being paid per time that they say Kink after some, you know, like between John Mayer songs or something? Occasionally they'll say kink.fm. And then that's it. And then they just go back into something
that
like...
That would be a personality event.
We're in the wrong end of the business.
That's an extended sweep is what
yes,
that is.
It is.
Right before they go into another Sarah McLachlan song.
All right. About homeless animals.
White. Here's Sarah McLachlan. Let's see. Rick, about sagging pants. Sagging actually started at least in the 1980s with the Los Angeles gang culture. Well, I saw a whole thing about this, actually, about how apparently the... This is just one theory, but the one that it seems to make the most sense is that a lot of it started in the hip-hop culture, which was, in turn, if you ask some sociologists, based upon... a lot of the L.A. County prison wear, which was very much a one-size-fits-all, where they would just give you these huge clothing, and if you didn't work, you just had to, like, cinch it up, and it sagged, and that was it. As far as to how those saggy pants are kept up...
So Paris Hilton's probably sagging about now.
I think Paris Hilton... Have you seen those extra butt flaps that she's armed with for no readily apparent reason? It's sort of like... It's sort of like she carries around spare butts with her. Like, in case her normal buttocks should vanish, she has, like, the extra butts that she can just attach.
In her Gucci purse?
Yes, exactly. Anyway, apparently they do tighten their belt, and they tend to wear layers underneath their pants to help, but the main thing is how they walk. Watch any youth who sags their pants lower than that special area, and you'll notice they walk like a... They walk like a crippled duck and often have one hand gripped tightly on the belt. It is true. I believe this youth who I was observing the other day worked for the promo department here. I think he was like one of the KUFO street team guys. But he had like the full-on, the pants sag going on. He did have sort of a weird sort of bow-legged gait to his stride. All right, here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Got some breaking news here for you.
Wait, hold on. Let me find the breaking news sounder. Give me just one second here, and we will bring you breaking news right here on the... I always do that. No, here...
From the CBS News Center downtown Portland, we have just learned Kelly Clarkson's summer tour has been canceled.
That's surprising.
Canceled. For now, and the singer and the team will reevaluate her show's size and scope. According to the press release...
And scope...
Kelly is a spectacular artist, an incredible performer who undoubtedly has what it takes to sustain a long and prosperous career.
Yeah.
The day will come when she can play sold-out arenas. It's no doubt coming, but for now her fans should look...
Fantastic, intimate. That's the word I was looking for.
She deserves a tremendous amount of praise for her courage. Tickets for the tour can be refunded at the point of purchase.
That's unfortunate. Wait, was she going to be coming here? Was she supposed to be playing Portland?
Yeah, I think she was.
You know, Sarah would know. I don't know where she... Well, she was apparently supposed to be playing one place here. Maybe, let's say, the Schnitzer? Because everything seems to be there lately. And now she will be coming back, and she will be playing... Probably not even the Roseland at this point. I mean, it's probably too big. I mean, really... Look, I don't mean to knock Kelly Clarkson. It would be unfairly mean-spirited of me for me to knock Kelly Clarkson.
She's a nice singer.
She's a nice singer. She sings a series of pleasant pop songs.
She does.
She's, competent, if not terribly interesting to me.
She was supposed to be at the Rose Garden on the 11th.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't going to happen. I could have told her that wasn't going to happen.
All she needs is one theater on the cloud now.
Just one. It's not the Theater of the Clouds.
Theater of the Cloud.
Theater of the Cloud. Interesting.
It's just like a snack bar in the corner of the Rose Garden.
I mean, really, I mean, that's it. It's, I mean, again, I don't mean to knock her.
The headline is Kelly in Crisis.
It's not a crisis. You sold some records, and now you're not selling as many, and that happens. Move on. Go call that Wolfman Jack Entertainment guy.
Oh, she fired her manager, according to Page.
Yeah,
that'll
always help. Hire your brother-in-law to manage your finances, too. That seems to be the next step and always the downward spiral here. So I don't mean to sound jerky about it. I would be unduly piling on. Kelly Clarkson never did anything to me. She seems like a nice girl. She was hot in that thing where she danced around in the wet Aerosmith T-shirt. I was a big fan of that. Whatever. But you're a reality television show winner. I mean, you've already extended your 15 minutes to do at least 30 or 40 minutes. You really ought to be grateful that you came this far. You know what I mean? I mean, Kelly Clarkson,
was on a hit television series. Did she win American Idol?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
She went over that Justin Guarini guy.
She won American Idol.
She was the first season winner, actually.
Yeah, she was.
Okay, yeah, because Ruben's daughter was the second season, right?
Whatever happened to him?
You know, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. It's like...
Wasn't he giving, like, inspirational pep talks to kids in the South or something?
What is an inspirational pep talk going to get? Be really lucky. My advice to you is to be lucky.
I think he was talking to them about how to lose weight or to not get large.
But he is large.
I mean, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. He's the wrong person to take advice from on that.
How I felt.
Do you know that Dr. Phil has a diet book out now? Look, I don't care. Everybody can live their life the way they want to live it. I don't understand the logic of taking diet advice from a man who seems, from first, second, and third glances, to be overweight. I don't really understand the logic there. Anyway, so Kelly Clarkson, she won American Idol. She was the first winner. She was famous. She got to be in a major motion picture. We can all make fun of the fact that it was bad, that it was like one step above Captain Geach and the Shrimp Shack Shooters. But, I mean, whatever. You know, she was in a motion picture. She was on MTV. She was on the VMAs, I think. She performed at the Grammys, I believe. She had a couple hit records. She sold like 3 million records. I mean, there's like 2% of the American population that can say they did that, if that. I mean,
it's enough to get booked into Chinook Winds.
Seriously, you can play casinos in Branson for the rest of your life. So why don't you shut your trap and quit your bitching about it, and quit saying you're going to be playing more intimate venues. Everybody sees right through that. That lie no longer.
Play Ringler's Annex
has left to. Has left to provide, you know, pursue future endeavors with, you know, with his family. No one believes any of these lies. No. Just come out and say the truth from now on.
I'm a failure.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm snorting a lot today. Here's Tim Riley.
The firing of Grey's Anatomy star Isaiah Washington was a calculated move.
In your face.
When series creator and executive producer Shonda Rhimes wept. When she got on the phone last Thursday to tell Washington he was out, the decision was coolly calculated by Ryan's bosses at the network and ABC television studios. His pattern of behavior represented a potential liability that was too much risk for the Walt Disney Company.
Has anybody made the obligatory, have we made the obligatory Gay's Anatomy joke yet?
No.
Gay's Anatomy. All right.
Well, that was funny.
Has he been in anything else? What did he do before Grey's Anatomy?
I don't remember.
Have I even seen Isaiah? Was that his breakthrough role?
I guess so.
Well, whatever. Well, hope you save some money. It's a short ride. So why don't you try not to be a bigoted a-hole next time? We'll see if things work out better for you on the next spin of the karmic wheel, my friend. All right, here's Tim Riley.
A judge has ruled that a 24-year-old Canadian man is not allowed to have a girlfriend for the next 3 years. The ruling came after Stephen Cranley pled guilty to several charges stemming from an assault on a former girlfriend. He had been diagnosed with a dependent personality disorder. He attacked his girlfriend in an argument after their breakup. He tried to prevent her from phoning the police by cutting her phone cord and punched and kicked her. He finally stabbed her with a butcher knife, puncturing his aorta.
His or hers?
Oh, he finally stabbed himself with a butcher knife. He had difficulty coping with the rejection, apparently.
Yeah,
he cannot
really
form a romantic relationship of an intimate nature with a female.
How sad, by the way, that he's a guy who is apparently a convicted domestic abuser and stabs things and punches things, and the judge has to order him not to have a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. What a sad indication that is on the poor choices that many women apparently make, not only in this country but in Canada, yeah, when choosing their man. So there you go. Is he forbidden from having a late night casual booty calls as well, or is this only a? How do they define girlfriend
booty calls?
I mean, this is a serious question. I'm actually wondering.
No girlfriend, or is the first of its kind?
But I mean, how are they? I wonder what they're with defining girlfriend as.
Did they enforce that?
I don't really know the answer to that.
Hmm.
Like, if the judge says, "Look, you're kind of an abusive dick, so you can't have a girlfriend."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what does that even really mean? Does that mean? I really am curious now. I was just starting, you know, at the beginning of this, like 30 seconds ago, I was just making a cheap joke and I was just giving my usual witty japes about things. But now I'm really curious. I wonder what the judge even really meant by that. Does that mean, is it like...
There's a lot of gray area in dating.
Exactly. Is this going to be like a like the no cruising rule on Broadway? Which is where, if you are on Broadway, you see there's no cruising signs which are up in the stoplight. And it says... If I'm correct, I'm not a youth, so these don't apply to me. But I think if the no cruising rule here is the same as it, and I do have a point, if the no cruising rule here is the same as it is in my hometown, it's that you cannot drive the same direction on the same street more than twice within a 20-minute interval where you are considered to be cruising the street, and they'll ticket your ass. So I wonder if that's this. I wonder if it's he cannot see a girl more than twice within, like, a 30-day period.
But then he could just have a bunch of special friends.
That's what I'm saying. He could just have a bunch
like
of casual
benefits.
Exactly.
Oh.
He could just have a casual. So really, the judge is just forcing him to use and then discard, like so many romantic Kleenexes, a whole series of women.
Lycus would love this.
This really is true. I wonder if Lycus is going to talk about this. Somebody ought to email the story to Tom. If you have it out already, somebody out there is a send the story to Lycus. I really am fascinated. Is this in Canada?
Yes, it is.
Well, God knows what kind of law they have up there. They're savages, so I don't know even know how they can enforce these things. But if I was going to ask Scotty to get somebody on the phone. I don't even know how you call Canada. Is it hard to call Canada?
No, they have area codes like we do.
Really? Is it true? They have civilized area codes where it's just like a 502 or something?
Canada is like America without Jesus.
Really?
Yes. Basically, that's what it comes down to.
Okay.
And health care for everyone.
Communism. Creeping socialism. It takes away your choices and freedom.
So really, Canada is like America, wholly swallowed by the red menace.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know what we're doing. Here's Tim Riley.
You can try calling Canada if you want. I'm sure you'll get through.
Well, what else can they be doing?
Hello, anybody Canadian there?
Canada's busy.
They're all going to the doctor.
Who can I? Have you seen that preview from the Sicko film where Michael Moore? He's so genius. He really is. As much as I'm never going to see that movie because it'll just make me angry. He is such a genius. And there's that whole sequence where I don't think it's in Canada, it's like in Scandinavia or Norway or someplace.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the same place, are they?
No.
No.
Norway's part of Scandinavia.
All right, well, whatever. Well, he's wandering around a hospital looking for the place where you pay your bill. And, of course, the joke is that there is no place there where you pay your bill because the state pays for it all. You know, which is wrong because they're evil. The government pays for your health care there because they're evil.
They're trying to take away your choices.
Nothing more evil than paying for
health care for people.
I wonder if I started paying for someone else's health care, if Scotty would feel that I was evil. All right. What do we... let's see. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah, they're going to enforce that law up there in Canada with the Royal Canadian Mounties.
Are you doing your own wah-wah for a joke? What is the joke? Oh, I see. Mounties.
Okay, let me see if I can get more information. I'm going to go to canoe.ca. CA meaning Canadian. And Canoe, short for Canadian News.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
Well, wait, that doesn't make any sense. C-A-N-O-E. How do they spell news up there?
It's C-News, which is short for Canoe.
All right. You just do that while I take this call. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
I read an article in the Oregonian about a really weird law in Canada that got passed in the government about a year ago that... going to make it illegal for you to fast-forward through commercials on your TiVo.
They're trying to do that here, actually. I don't know if it's going to take effect, but they're trying to do that here because the argument that they are trying to make, and by they, I mean the man, they're trying to make this argument here that when you watch a television commercial, it is part of an implied contract that you are giving your consent to, that you are getting the programming for free in exchange for watching the television commercials, that you are giving your consent to that contract, and that it is therefore theft of service if you don't watch the TV commercials. They're trying to do that here. Probably won't happen, but they are trying to do that in America as well.
But isn't that something that's completely, like,
it's retarded is what it is. What?
There's no way to enforce it.
Well, I mean, theoretically speaking, they could mandate that your TiVo no longer let you do that. I mean, for example, I'll tell you this. When the TiVo was first created, and by when I mean first created, I mean back in like 99, they had a 30-second skip feature. There was a button you could press that skipped you ahead 30 seconds. And that, of course, makes it really easy to go through a commercial break on the TV because the spots are all in 30-second increments. So if it's a 6-minute break, you hit the thing 12 times, bam, you're back in the show. Right before they rolled the TiVo out, they disabled that feature. And it's still there, although you have to punch in a really convoluted code on the remote control to activate it. But they removed that feature at the behest of advertising lobbyists. So it is conceived, and because the TiVo runs, I'm turning into a total nerd here, but because the TiVo runs largely not on hardware but on software. In other words, do you have a TiVo?
No, I don't. But, you know, that technology is decades old because my parents had a TV that you could hit a button for how many commercials you think are going to happen.
Right.
And when you change the channel, there's a little timer that was clicking down.
Well, here's the thing about TiVo.
If you know that it's like three commercials, then you just go, you click it three times, and a minute 30 starts counting down as soon as you change the channel, and then you go, oh, minute 30's up, and you click back to wherever you were.
The thing,
go,
the
hey,
thing about the TiVo, though, the thing about the TiVo is this, is that the TiVo runs on software, not hardware, by which I mean, in other words, every so often, like about every 60 days, I'll just get a little notice on my TiVo saying, hey, by the way, we've upgraded your software. We've added a whole bunch of new features. Like they just added this thing where you can get the Onion video news on your TiVo. I didn't do anything. They just updated my software one night while I was asleep. So it is entirely conceivable. I'm not saying they would ever do this. But should they want to, it is entirely conceivable that the TiVo company, if ordered, could send down a little bit of code into your TiVo while you're asleep one night that just disables your ability to skip commercials. I'm not saying they're going to do it. But it is theoretically, it is technically possible. So probably not going to happen. Canada is kind of a weird place. I mean, they got things up there that are good. Canada is kind of a strange country, you know. So I mean, they got there's some weirdness up there, what with Quebec and all.
Well, I guess in that sense, then everyone will just start watching their shows 10 minutes later, so they can fast forward them after the fact.
Exactly, sir. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Did we get a?
Well, I looked. I couldn't find anything more in it, so I went to the city where this happened, and their new headline is "Stolen Beer Found."
Well, in Canada, that is a tragedy.
Three tractor trailers filled with cases of Corona was stolen from a parking lot.
We're going to stop everything and find this beer.
Apparently.
That's
with their flapping heads.
I was just going to say, they don't have an Amber Alert. They have an Amber Ale Alert.
They think organized crime has something to do with it.
Do I not even get a courtesy laugh for that? Amber Ale. They have an Amber Ale Alert. You sons of bitches. F you guys.
Oh, wait a minute. I think I found it. Hang on.
Thank you, buddy.
Now let's get the same old story.
Let's look for the story in real time on the internet.
Okay. Apparently, he entered her room, cut her phone with wire cutters, and began slapping and punching her. When the female roommate tried to intervene and call 911, then Craney grabbed her and cut her phone cord as well. Apparently, there were two girls in here, and he said they were going to slit both their throats. Then he picked up the butcher knife, stabbed himself in the chest. He underwent a 30-day medical health assessment, and he was deemed criminally responsible for his actions and mentally stand fit to or trial. He has a personality disorder, apparently. He pled guilty in previous court to two counts of assault, and he was fined $5,000 Canadian. Let's see here. No, it doesn't say any more than that. He's been ordered not
to
have a girlfriend.
So we have no idea what this means when they say he can't have a girlfriend.
No, we're going to have to contact the Ontario authorities.
All right.
All that for nothing.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick, it's Mike.
Hi.
You just said that the theft of services, because you implied by watching the commercials that you're going to receive television.
I'm not saying this is my belief. I'm saying that is the opinion of, that is what the hucksterism that the advertising lobbyists are trying to use. They're trying to claim that when you watch it, when you sit down to watch Grey's Anatomy, in other words, that it is an implied contract that you are agreeing to by watching the show. That, in other words, by watching this program, I agree to watch the TV commercials. That's the sort of shield that they're trying to use here.
Well, I understand that, but the problem is you can't watch TV without cable or satellite anymore because the signal sucks. So, you're paying for it.
Well, I understand, sir. I know you don't have to convince me, my friend. It's a retarded argument. I'm just saying, like the recording industry of America, and like the MPAA, they're just grasping at increasingly untenable straws, trying to get people to watch their poorly
and
done
it's
commercials.
So easily solved, too.
Yeah. I mean, that's yeah. They're trying to click their ruby slippers back, you know, together and trying to make it 1985 again. When you had to watch,
then you just buy it on DVD and you don't have to worry about commercials at all.
That's what I'm saying, my friend.
Have
all right, thank you. When you buy those DVDs, please buy them at CD Game Exchange, 5 locations in Portland, 1 near you.
Who knew Tony Curtis almost died?
Yeah, that, you bastards. What?
Tony Curtis almost died. I didn't even know that. Had I not been reading this Canadian newspaper, I probably wouldn't have known.
Tony Curtis. Wait, hold on. Stop. Not Tony Randall, not Tony Bennett. Tony Curtis.
Tony Curtis.
Tony Curtis.
Tony Curtis.
Tony Curtis.
Tony Curtis.
Broughton Bishop. Goose.
He nearly died of pneumonia earlier this year.
Tony Curtis, you know, I was just watching him in The Sweet Smell of Success the other day, where he plays PR guy Sidney Falco. What a fantastic... You haven't seen that. You've got to see that. Tony Curtis, Burt Lancaster, And then a bunch of other people. It's a great, it's a fantastic movie. It's a very, just a black comedy, very noir, takes place in Manhattan. I don't think there's any daylight scenes. Everything takes place at about 2 a.m. at nightclubs in Manhattan. It is the story of Burt Lancaster, who plays J.J. Hunsaker, a very powerful Matt Drudge, Walter Winchell-type columnist, and Sidney Falco, who is Tony Curtis, who is trying to do some dirt for a guy. He's trying to get do a thing for a dame with a broad, and he's going to have a belt and get on his jalopy and drive back to his pad and crash. And it's just fantastic. It's the best movie. It's so great. You got to watch it.
He's in something called How to Smuggle a Hernia Across the Border.
Tony Curtis is?
Mm-hmm.
All I know,
you spit the video.
All I know is that Tony Curtis is he was married to Janet Leigh, right?
Yeah, I was married to some young chick who's 42 years younger than he.
Really?
Is.
Yeah. Really? God bless him. God bless you, Tony Curtis. First of all, just the fact that he got to put it to Janet Leigh, who was just hot as balls, just so.
And Marilyn Monroe.
No.
Yes.
Tony Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
Were they in the 7-Year Itch together?
I believe so. Yes.
Boy. You know, Marilyn Monroe, I suspect, was not as hot as we think she was.
No.
I mean, if you were to go, and I don't mean to work blue here. I'm not trying to be crude. I really do mean this in the truest sense. If you were to, and forgive me for how crude this sounds, if you were to go back and to just, like, strip Marilyn Monroe naked and hose her down, I don't think she was as hot. In other words, I think without the very careful attention to hair, makeup, she wore a lot of padding in certain states. She wore falsies, for lack of a better, as they used to say, as my grandmother used to say. She augmented her figure in many ways. I'm not saying she was an ugly woman. I don't think Marilyn Monroe, just in the altogether, as she rolls out of bed in the morning, I don't think she was probably as hot as we think she was. I think that's a lot of retrospective sex appeal that's been put on her. I'm not saying she was an ugly woman. Obviously, she was pretty. I don't think Marilyn Monroe was probably as hot as we think. Janet Leigh never got credit. Janet Leigh was hotter, just scorching. So unbelievably hot. I always go back to Psycho because that's the definitive Janet Leigh for me. That opening sequence where she's in the hotel room in Phoenix, Arizona with that guy. And she's sitting on the bed. I know I sound either really nerdy or really lecherous or quite possibly both. And Sarah's not here to be my benchmark. So Kristen will have to let me know if I sound like a skeezy old guy here. But there is the greatest thing. There is the greatest thing in Psycho. There's a little this little thing that Hitchcock does in Psycho, which in Psycho is such a fantastic film. My wife had never seen it, and I'm like, you got to see Psycho. She's like, I already know. Norman Bates dressed up as like his mom. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you know the twist ending or not. It's such a brilliant film. It's so fantastic. Psycho is so close to being flawless. But there's this great thing where it opens with this long push-in shot of Janet Leigh sitting on a hotel bed with a man with whom she has obviously just had illicit sexual congress in the middle of the day. He's all like a big beefcake 50s guy. He's buttoning up his shirt. She is sitting there in, I believe, a skirt, and then she's just got a bra on, which I think was very racy at the time. I think it was very pushing the envelope. And she's there in a white bra. Now, that's telling because this is before she has stolen $40,000 from her employer. Later on, when she is in the Bates Motel in cabin 12, I think, 12 cabins, 12 vacancies, mm-hmm. She's there and Norman Bates is moving the picture aside and he's looking through a hole in the wall, watching her undress, and she's in a black bra because she has become a bad girl. She has sinned, stolen the $40,000, and she is now wearing black underthings to symbolize the fact that she has now chosen the path of immorality. And then, of course, Hitchcock does the whole weird morality play of then having her knifed in the shower later. It's just the best movie, and she's just freaking hot like you can't. Scorches your eyeballs to look at her. They really don't make women like Janet Leigh anymore.
I don't
really
think that was lecherous at all.
Oh, it's great. And you don't really notice it until it's pointed out to you, and then you realize how great Hitchcock was. And Hitchcock, who was just so great and stylish and evil and perverse and just so just so warped, you know? God love him. I miss Alfred Hitchcock. I really do. You know, Dennis Miller's been going on about Vertigo a lot recently. I haven't seen that movie in a long time. I got to see Vertigo.
My favorite.
Again.
And he's one of the front runners to replace Imus, according to this latest article.
Alfred Hitchcock?
No.
Dennis Miller?
Yes.
That's a great. You know what? They could do a hell of a lot worse. He has great television experience. People remember him being on TV. He's got great presence. Spare him in the emails. I think he's funny. So what are you gonna do? And he quotes Glengarry Glen Ross every day. So I got to love a guy for that. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, wasn't Tony Curtis also one of the co-stars of the Time Tunnel from the 60s?
Tim? Tony Curtis, Time Tunnel.
I don't don't think so.
I feel like we're feeding something into like an old 50s computer, and in Tim's head the reels are spinning and lights are blinking, and there's a
little card just spitting out, and the man is sitting behind a console with things, and he just picks it up and looks at it, and doesn't say anything. He's got a bunch of holes punched in it.
We're getting an IBM punch card that says do not spindle on the front.
It says UNIVAC stamped on the top of it.
UNIVAC. That's well done. If you really wanted to wow me, you would have made an ENIAC reference, sir.
Oh, that's true.
Hold on.
Program starred James Dearen, Robert Colbert, Lee Merriweather, Whit Bissett.
Lee Merriweather?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. I could have sworn...
Clark, I'm tired of flying on Alaska Airlines.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
All right. Apparently not Tony Curtis, sir.
Oh, well, very good.
Thank you. Tony Curtis, what a pretty man he was, too. And I mean that in the truest sense. He was a good-looking man, but a very pretty man as well. I've just become unbelievably gay here in the last 5 seconds. He had the most sparkling eyes. And I guess still does because he's not dead, right?
He's still alive.
Tony Curtis has the most sparkling eyes. He has like Paul Newman sparkle in his eyes.
He has a movie coming out next year.
Tony Curtis?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. God bless him. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi. How's it going, Rick?
Oh, you know, what's up?
Well, I was just wondering, I mean, with Tony Curtis, Condoleezza Rice, and Nancy Grace, I just wanted to know, who wouldn't you do?
Well, really, I don't know that there's an answer to that question.
Janet Reno.
Yeah, probably not Janet Reno. Or who is this hideous woman?
Condoleezza Rice and Nancy Grace.
No,
you got
No. You don't find Condoleezza Rice to be sexy. Not necessarily physically attractive. In other words, she may not be the prettiest woman on earth. She's not ugly. But you don't find her to have a certain sort of sex appeal.
I'd do her out of principle, just to say I did.
Well,
especially if I could videotape it.
I gotta quit snorting. I think Condoleezza Rice has got the. I think if you can just you unleash her just a little bit, you get her maybe just drunk enough, or maybe out of the spotlight long enough. I think there's a. There's a sex machine there waiting to be unleashed. Mm. Just my theory.
She looks like Golem.
No, that's it. No. No, and people unfairly seize on that gap in her teeth too. I think she's attractive. I really do. Thank you, sir.
Tony Curtis was born Bernard Schwartz.
Well, of course.
Born in the Bronx.
Don't you assume that everybody from that era was born, with some long name or some different name than the one they had?
He's a son of a tailor from Hungary, and he still speaks Hungarian.
Let's see. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hi, how can I help you, sir?
Hey, Janet Leigh in Prince Valiant and the Vikings.
Prince Valiant and the Vikings?
Those were her first two movies when she was 18.
Really? I don't even know that I've heard of those. If it's not like I'm a member for a fan club or something.
It was in the Vikings. It was Tony Curtis and Kirk Douglas, and she played the Viking queen that they were both after. But the most gorgeous vision, incredible beauty.
I know that, and she was in some westerns too. She was in some westerns where they always managed to put her in a really tight fitting like leather vest of some sort of leather vest with fringe on it.
That's what this was. Leather vest with fringe on it.
Yeah. Yeah,
it
no,
was great.
Yeah, it's
absolutely fantastic.
All right, thank you, sir.
And one other thing, too.
Yeah.
This implied consent thing about the commercials, if you watch the show, you have to watch the commercials. That would prevent you from ever changing the channel or even turning your TV off.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would, my friend.
Okay.
Thank you. There you go. All right, 503-733-2970. Did we ever hear from Jim Roop?
No.
Scotty J. Pleased to be finding out what happened to our friend Jim Roop, who was supposed to be talking. I didn't even realize this. We got so caught up talking about the hottest balls, Janet Leigh. Let's see. Could you please be finding out what happened to Jim Roop? Rick, can you please ask Kristen if women are flattered by being told they are hot as balls? Thank you.
If you're from Gresham, yes.
You don't have to, you don't have to answer that if you don't want to. All right.
I wouldn't find it flattering.
I'm just saying it is. It's a thing that now...
As a description, I can accept it, but if it were said to me, not so much.
We've got this. Rick, some like it hot with Marilyn Monroe and Jack Lemmon. She is unbelievably beautiful. Also, Vertigo is the best Alfred Hitchcock film. Tony Curtis is now the spokesperson for Chinook Winds Casino. Good for him.
Oh, yeah, I've seen this picture with the cowboy hat and the billboard.
Was that him?
Yeah, that was him.
I didn't even recognize him.
That's him.
Damn. All right. Well, what are you going to do? Well, we all got to get work. Let's see. What else do we have here? Rick, you're constant talking about the sparkle in Tony Curtis's eyes, plus the fact that you opened your show with Mommy Dearest today. And then he just signs it. Uh-huh. All right.
Scotty J can be your spokesperson.
Yes. He does speak for me. It's 503-733-2970. Well, we should break here regardless. We got a couple. Jesus God, it's 1:30 already. Where does the time go?
That is a good question. Stephen Hawking would be able to answer that, you know. But it would just take like an hour. It's 503-733... Well, Rick, I'm glad you asked me that. 503-733-2970. Back after this. Here's what we got coming up. More from Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Kristen Bowie's top five albums of all time. Later on, Jim Roop. Dom Likas at 3. Don and Mike at 7. You say there's the Rick Emerson Show. The Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Here's a guy to be glad you're not. I apologize for that sentence construction. This is from, the hell is this from? Fond du Lac. Where the hell is that? I think it's in Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's one of those Prairie Home Companion places.
Meanwhile, in Fond du Lac.
With every syllable, he gasps.
Oh, man.
I don't know why that show's still on the air.
Inertia.
Didn't it cease to be popular like 20 years ago?
They keep forgetting it's on the schedule. Therefore, it's like the X-Files. They just forgot it was there, and therefore nobody's canceled it.
This is the prairie.
Here in Lake Wobegon, things are tiresome and pretentious and inexplicably beloved by critics. Let's see. So this is from Sheboygan. I love it when there's great news in a town that I typically only reference as a punchline, like Kalamazoo or Sheboygan, which is kind of my go-to funny town. Mm. Sheboygan man drowns after becoming stuck in sewer. A 41-year-old Sheboygan man drowned Wednesday after getting stuck in a sewer while attempting to receive a dropped cell phone, police said. Sometimes you got to let those cell phones go, my friend.
I think we did this story last week.
No. That was a different story. That was a kid.
Oh, this is a copycat.
This is a... He wanted all... He was jealous of the attention.
He was.
Last week, it was another... Last week, it was a kid who dove in after a cell phone, and then an adult went in after the kid.
You could lose...
Get a cell phone for like $100 now. I don't understand.
You could lose a whole village that way. They were all dumb enough. Oh, it gets better. Brett Gunn, who weighed more than 350 pounds, was wedged with his head and shoulders underneath the fluid line. They can't say water line because it's not water. It's, you know, stool. Was wedged with his head and shoulders underneath the fluid line in a sewer in front of his home in the 3200 block. I love it when they give out the guy's address so that everybody can go by and mock the family personally. Yeah. Your dad drowned in feces. Gunn was unconscious and presumably smelly when rescuers pulled him out shortly after a neighbor reported the incident. Neighbors said they saw him kneeling over the sewer moments before he fell in. I don't know if he dropped something or what, so I went back around my business and moved back to a spot where I was further back in the yard and didn't see him, a neighbor said. Later, a child ran up to the neighbor waving his arm, saying, what is it? Oh, this is smudged. This part, blah, blah, whatever. Fell in. Huh. That's it. Just smudges, then it goes right to fell in. Apparently, he was completely unresponsive. So, there you go. Rescue workers describe the situation as surreal. Ladies and gentlemen, from Los Angeles, and welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey.
What's up with you, brother man?
She's good. I'm good.
Hey,
good.
Try to avoid sewers. Apparently, they're sucking people in left and right across the fruited plain.
Yeah, so I hear.
I mean, really, and Kristen pointed it out here. You know, you get a cell phone and a box of cereal these days. If you lose one, you know, I mean, look. I mean, I've dropped things just like, you know, behind a shelf in my house. Like, drop something down behind the stove and I don't care enough to go get it. You drop something into a thing filled with human feces. I'm going to let that go. I'm going to move on. That's God's way of telling you to upgrade to get a new Motorola Q. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like you better throw a couple $100 down there because I'm not going down there just for that phone.
Hey, seriously, you can just sit at home and set fire to a pile of $20 bills. It's easier, less time consuming. All right. Hey, the question of the day, how crazy is Phil Spector?
It's the defense got a pretty devastating blow today.
When they found out that their client is crazy and guilty? When they found out that Phil Spector's a nutcase who probably did it?
No, the prosecution wants to call Sarah Kaplan, who used to work with Robert Shapiro when he was Spector's attorney. And she testified outside the jury's presence that she saw Dr. Henry Lee, the forensics expert for the defense, pick up a little white object off the foyer of the floor in Spector's home, put it in a vial and take it off with him, and he didn't turn it over to the prosecution, you know, the whole discovery.
Right.
And but she refuses to testify to that in front of the jury, and Dr. Henry Lee denies that accusation.
Well,
so the judge says, look, either you say that because just like Spector deserves a fair trial, so do the people of California, and you can't withhold evidence. And he finds her testimony to be very credible, more credible than Dr. Lee's. So he says, if you don't testify, I'm going to hold you in contempt. And it's a coercive contempt. It's not a punitive contempt where it's like 5 days in jail. She's got to stay in there until she either testifies or the case is over.
So they hold her there until she coughs up whatever they want.
Yeah, just like they were doing in the Balco case.
Yeah.
You know?
So what is the thing they? What is the object they think was
picked
up off the floor?
I think it's a fingernail.
What?
A white little white object.
Interesting. I wonder what difference that would make.
Don't ask me. It's just something to do.
It's
something to make this thing last 4 years.
It's just a job.
Yeah.
You're just there punching a time clock.
I think it's just the issue that this could be possible evidence tampering, you know, or the perception of.
Because God knows that would never happen in a Los Angeles the court case. God knows that nobody in a Los Angeles homicide case would ever tamper with anything or plant anything. That would never happen.
Yeah, but I got to admire this Sarah Kaplan, though, man. She says, look, you know, I don't want to do it. It's attorney-client privilege. And the judge says, a conversation is attorney-client privilege, not observation.
Right.
You got to testify to what you saw because nobody else can say. You're the only one that saw it.
Sure.
You got to say it. And if you don't say it, you're going in the jail. You could be Paris Hilton's partner.
Well, you know, and I think it was Lisa Goddard who was actually saying this. She was saying that she actually kind of wants to get sent to jail one of these days for contempt because it just gives you all kinds of street cred. If you're a journalist or if you're, you know, whatever, you're a lawyer or something, you refuse to cough up evidence and, you know, and they send you to the pokey and then you can sort of brag on it. You can just sort of have all kinds of, you know, you just a little feather in your cap for the rest of your day. The man tried to make me talk and I refuse, you know.
Depends on what happens to you when you're in the pokey.
No, it's not. But, you know, you get a little bit of that Bobby Seale, you know, credibility. Where it's the man couldn't break me. So, well, let me ask you this. In your estimation, how far are we through this Phil Spector case? 50%? 20?
Well, not even 50%. First of all, there's still more prosecution witnesses to call. Then the defense has to mount its case.
Yes.
And then the prosecution will cross-examine each one of those defense witnesses. And then there's going to be, you know, the second chance that the prosecution gets to put on its case. I forget what the hell they call it.
The rebuttal.
The rebuttal case. And so, and then there's the closing arguments, and there's all the deliberation. You know, you're looking at 2010.
Excellent. Fantastic. You know, by that time, the alien spaceship that initially deposited Phil Spector here on planet Earth will come back to pick him up anyway. You know, we have come to retrieve you and take you back to Zarquan 5, you know.
He's got some kind of lazy eye or something. There's something going on with that guy. I think it's his left eye.
Yeah, no, he's a nutcase. I keep meaning to reread. I have this biography called He's a Rebel, which is a book put out. It's really outdated because I don't even think it covers him working with the Ramones, and that was like 30 years ago. But I was at Powell's Bookstore, which is our legendary local independent bookstore here, and I was walking by the new releases, and I noticed that they are reissuing like every book about Phil Spector that's ever been written.
Well, there's a new one out, too, called Tearing Down the Wall of Sound.
Oh, yeah. I saw that one, too. Is that one new?
Yeah, it's brand new.
And then if they're smart, they'll release that Back to Mono box set, which they put out a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great, by the way. If you don't have the Back to Mono box set, and if you are a fan of great music, that is a fantastic set of music. So they ought to put that thing back out again. And it contains his legendary Christmas album in its entirety. So I got to tell you, whether he killed some folks or not, you can't get past the fact that, boy, goddamn, like those Crystals records just were unbelievably great.
He put out some good tunes, didn't he?
Maybe I'll do that tomorrow. Maybe I'll do top five Phil Spector productions tomorrow. Or top five Wall of Sound productions. So maybe we do a musical top five. We try to do one every day. Maybe tomorrow I'll do the top five Wall of Sound songs.
Hey, any excuse to play some Ramones, huh?
Seriously, well, that's what I'm saying. It's the end of the century by the Ramones. And then, of course, there's an honorary Wall of Sound songs like Born to Run by Springsteen, which isn't produced by Spector, but goddamn, you listen to it, you can tell that's exactly what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a song by Alice Cooper called Road Rats, which is very clearly supposed to be the Wall of Sound. There's a lot of those Meatloaf records that he did with Jim Steinman are supposed to be Wall of Sound productions. I mean, Phil Spector is maybe the most influential record producer who ever lived.
He was ahead of his time then, that's for sure.
It absolutely is true, and I mean,
He's one of those guys. Phil Spector, not to be, just go on and on about it, because now I start to sound like Terry Gross or something, but I mean, Phil Spector's one of those guys who was born at the right time and the wrong time, because Phil Spector is like one of those guys who was a silent film star, who made his bones and was really famous, made a lot of money, but then was destroyed when talkies came along.
Yeah.
He made so much money and had such a legacy and had such an impact, but then stereo destroyed him, because his entire production technique was based on monophonic sound, one channel. And stereophonic sound just destroyed Phil Spector because he didn't know how to use it, and he couldn't use any of his tricks in stereophonic sound. And if you listen to some of those, even like Beach Boys records, which are based on the Phil Spector sound, if you listen to them in stereo, they don't sound nearly as good to my ears. They're That's meant true. To be heard in mono.
Yeah, you're right.
God damn, I'm just a ponderous dork.
Plus,
sometimes.
They were compressed that way, too.
Yeah,
you know?
yep.
And you know, we're lucky because we were around, sort of, we may have been young, we were around when all of that forging ahead of the music industry was happening. Now, I mean, is there anybody or is there anywhere to go? There's no pioneering left in music. I mean, it's all been done, and now it's just playing with what's there.
Yeah, it's true.
And I would love to see whatever the evolutionary process is, whatever the next step is, I'd love to find out what that's going to be, because I can't see what it could be.
I really do, and I know that maybe every generation says that, so maybe we're just old. I don't know. I can't tell sometimes what I'm saying because I'm old or what I'm saying because I really think it, but I really don't know if there's going to be, I mean, what the next big thing in music would even be. Because
there hasn't been much music produced lately.
And I know that maybe every generation says this too, but a lot of the things that are the next big thing now sound like things that were done 20 or 30 years ago. And I don't know, goddamn, I just sound like a geezer.
And you know what? There has to be an infinite combination, or there has to be a finite combination of notes. At some point, we're going to run out of combinations, and everything will sound like everything else.
I'm glad you mentioned this. I was reading a study the other day. I say, becoming even more tedious. I was reading a study the other day that some guy was saying that we are actually going to run out of original song melodies in like 2014. He said by 2014, at the rate, and he had some formula for like the number of new records that come out every year, blah, 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 blah. And he was saying like by 2014, every new melody will have been done. The combination of notes will have been exhausted. So take that for what you will.
There you go.
All right, my brother. You and I are the last true men. That's all I can say. You and I, the pioneers, last man standing, Jim Roop. So,
well,
all right.
Let's go kick some ass.
Enjoy your day, brother.
All right, bud.
All right, there you go. Fantastic. It's proof positive, and I'm not, you know what? I'm going to stop myself right now because nobody cares. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, Tim Riley.
Ah.
When you said the last true men, were you also speaking of anchormen?
Yes. It's the last true newsman. Well, you're in a class by yourself. Jim and I are just normal men. You're a newsman.
That's right. Well, Ashley and Mary Kate Olsen have celebrated their 21st birthdays. Make them finally legal to drink and do whatnot.
Just seems like just the other day we were sitting around looking at a countdown clock waiting for them to be legal.
So how would you like Hillary Clinton to speak at your high school graduation?
More than anything.
She did so yesterday at Manassas, Virginia. She offered some advice for this year's young people.
Dare to compete. Be willing to really test yourself. But constantly be asking yourself, how much better can I do?
Speak in a robotic monotone voice. Try to be shrill and irritating at every turn.
There's a racy video praising U.S. Senator and presidential hopeful Barack Obama circulating on the internet.
Is this the thing about him and the blonde girl?
The clip posted on the video sharing website, the YouTube, features a scantily clad model named Obama Girl who sings
Obama
in support
girl.
Of Obama's
Is that
campaign
like,
policy.
Is being Obama Girl like being a Charlie Girl?
I guess so.
So I put down my Charlie sign. Knew I had to make you mine. Like a sexy, you're so fine. Cause I gotta cry.
Hey, we're Dr. Doug and Skippy. Don't forget to become one of our VIPs. And you too can be going to see a show courtesy of Charlie 97.1.
We steal all the jokes from the Rick Emerson Show and recycle them every morning. We steal everything here on Charlie.
Oh, my God. Did I tell you that I heard the worst? I know that
no,
this...
But no, but you do want
no,
to hear
it. No, I know that this... You got to listen. This is a joke in two parts. Not a joke. It's a story in two parts. Now, I'm going to tell you the first part, and it's not going to surprise you at all. The second part will surprise you. You know, I heard the worst thing on Charlie the other day.
How could that happen?
I know that that's not...
I mean, it's just like my iPhone. I don't have anything bad on
it. The world is ending when you hear something bad on Charlie.
It's not... I know that that's not the surprising part. I was at Fry's Electronics, and I was looking for an accessory for my MP3 player, blah, 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 blah. And they had...
If you bought an iPod, you wouldn't have an accessory.
But you shut up! they had one of those Zunes. At least I didn't buy one of those things. They had one of those Zunes there, and they were, you know, they were playing. It has an FM transmitter thing. You know, you get an FM radio. It gets FM radio as well as playing MP3s. Blah blah blah. So I'm standing in the aisle, and they're playing Charlie of all things. And by the way, note to the Microsoft people: I'm standing there, and I took a good 10-12 minutes trying to pick out the accessory for my new MP3 jukebox. Meanwhile, Charlie. It's just blaring out of this Microsoft Zune thing, and it was so difficult to use, I couldn't figure out how to turn it off. I'm, like, punching every button, like, oh, God, how do I turn it off? And I couldn't get the Zune to turn off or down. I couldn't unplug it. It was like HAL. It couldn't be stopped. There ought to be a radio station, by the way, just called HAL. HAL 105. But I want to hear something. I want to hear something else and different. I'm sorry, I can't do that. But I don't want to hear lame DJs reading liner cards. I'm sorry, listener. I want to hear something creative with personality. I'm sorry, I can't do that. I'm stealing that. That's mine right now. Don't steal that. That's my bit. I have created that bit right here, a radio station called HAL 105. HAL 105. I swear to God, if anybody else steals it, I will find you and I will kneecap you. Anyway, so I'm there at Fry's. The Microsoft Zune can't be stopped from playing 97.1. It's playing Charlie. And it's at deafening volume. I heard the worst, most retarded liner. I mean, I've heard a lot of really stupid positioning statements. I've heard a lot of really, really dumb production. And let me tell you, as somebody who once worked on Max 910,
leave the toilet seat up.
I'm qualified to speak about bad imaging, okay?
Some 50-year-old guy in a glass cubicle came up with this.
I'm a big cliche being used to pander to men with this Max 910 format. Yes,
I can only come up with ideas like this, I can make it to my retirement in this business.
So I'm qualified to talk about bad imaging, okay? Anyway, so I'm listening to Charlie against my will, and which is the way that most people listen to that station, by the way, because you're sitting there and you're waiting to get a molar extracted, and
they're
trying to distract you from the pain in your mouth by inflicting horrible Matchbox 20 songs on you from like a speaker recessed in the ceiling somewhere. So I'm listening to Charlie, and they played the worst liner. I mean, I don't know that they realize how bad this makes the station seem. I mean, the station sounds bad just because the station sounds bad. But there's no need to run imaging like this. They finish one song, and then they come on in that really stupid, like, faux casual, like, you know, we're not really a consolidated, consulted radio format. We're just like you. We're just people in a room playing music that we like. Like that faux, stupid, like...
People in the box.
Almost insulting.
Relatable, like, you know, like we're not really a commercial radio format imaging that they do. And they come on and they say, I did so bad I don't want to repeat it. They finish a song on Charlie, and then the voice of the station comes on and it says, it's not a format... It's Oprah's CD collection.
Oh, no.
Charlie. And then they go into some piece of crap, you know, like, again, you know, some, like, bad John Mayer song or whatever. Some, like, Avril Lavigne thing. To say that it made my skin crawl. I mean, my skin didn't so much crawl as my skin sprinted off of my body and ran down the hall. It was unbelievable. It made me want to pound big, like, it made me want to pull out my teeth with a claw hammer. I mean, it was so terrible.
Who identifies with that, really?
Idiots. That's who.
People who go to see Pirates of the Caribbean for $500 million.
Yeah.
Those kind of idiots.
Totally. Yeah. Exactly.
There's no shortage of them.
Either. Where can I go to get some breadsticks before I see Pirates of the Caribbean? All right, here's Tim Ronnie.
A bill in Congress that would repeal the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy as a new sponsor. California Congresswoman Eileen Tishner will now be heading the effort to strike down the policy that prohibits gays and lesbians from serving openly in the military. She called the Military Readiness Enhancement Act. She said it would improve the military by making sure it has the most qualified people, whatever that
is. I called the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell for the obvious reasons, because this is a national security issue and an equal rights issue.
Color me stupid here. Do other industrialized, right-thinking, upstanding nations have a don't ask, don't tell policy?
No, I think Bulgaria does, but it's the only one left.
I mean, we had some other
It's just like Iran, right?
Yeah.
It's just like us and Iran and China.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the rest of the world has managed to get over it. Jesus, God almighty. So, this is just like that business of the TV people trying to force you into watching their... It's not 1950 anymore. Things change. You got to move on. So, I'm sorry that you can no longer live in the town of Pleasantville, but it is 2007. You're just going to have to accept that life is not one big episode of Father Knows Best and is heterosexual. So, let's just move forward as a group, shall we? Huh? I'm sure Scotty would agree. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Here's something cheerful that you'll like. A new biography about the late country stars Johnny and Junie Cash is now in stores. It's called Anchored in Love, the ultimate portrait of June Carter Cash. The legendary singer's son, John Carter Cash, opens up about his family by focusing on his mom's life. But he notes that to write an honest book, he had to explore aspects of her life that would be difficult for him to address.
I got to go back through her and my father's deaths. I got to go through this, and can I find redemption? And can the point of the book be one of love, one of redemption, and one of acceptance? And that be the point of the book, and it not be about addiction, not be about the pain? And so hopefully I related that.
I don't understand. There was like no content in there. Who is this?
John Carter Cash. The son of Johnny and June Carter.
You know, it's like they've only got three names in that family. Everybody there is either John or Carter or Carter or June or June or Cash or Cash or June or Cashter or, you know, everybody. I mean, look, I understand that they're a musical family and they've got a legacy and they've got a blah, blah, blah and whatever. They've got to get some new names in there because it's impossible to keep track of anybody in that family.
Well, it's too late to ask Johnny and June now,
I suppose. But you can tell that he probably was not gifted with his father's voice, but he's trying to talk real low to act as though he's
I wonder what he does.
Yes. He sits around and is Johnny Cash's kid. That's his job. I mean, what else is he supposed to... He's like, what's his name? He's like that... he's like Santa's electric rocket sled, that guy in that movie. Just sits around. What do you do for a living? I'm Johnny Cash's son. I mean, really, what else do you need to do?
He'll address his mother's battle with drugs.
At that point, I'm going more into, you know, the realities of my mother's addictions, which she had physical pains that led her to. But, you know, and that's something that's never been talked about.
Well, all right, so...
There you go.
Must at some point. All right. All right. Well, Jesus, it's 2 o'clock. It's 2 o'clock.
It's
almost
2 o'clock.
Well, we should probably break here. Here's what we're going to do. We'll take a break.
Yes.
We'll come back. Mm-hmm. We're going to do the top five, Kristen Bowie's top five albums of all time. I'm looking at the screen here. That's pretty cool. Okay, we come back. Hey, Scotty, can you ask line one? Can she hang a couple minutes, or do we need to do it now? I don't know how
I think she can.
I don't know how the...
if she's asked nicely.
I don't know how the New Zealand phone system works. Is it? Can we wait, or is there a thing we got to do now? I mean, just because I don't want to get behind, but I want to... Okay, great. So we get back, we have a special guest weighing in from New Zealand, as well as somebody wanted to talk about Janet Leigh. We'll do the top five, and then the high concept section of the Rick Emerson Show begins, in which you decide what television programs I will watch from now on, because everything I like is either canceled or overdone or ended. All right. Hey, listen to that. Did you do this intentionally? Phil Spector writing. Produced by Phil Spector, Rock and Roll High School from the End of the Century album. God bless you. And listen to that. Listen to how big and huge that is.
You don't hear that anymore.
Well, you know, the key is monophonic sound.
If they put a gun to your head, you do it.
Totally. Play it better! Phil has played the guitar, but play it again! Why, hello there, kids. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970 coming up here in just a skosh, as our Asian friends say. We have the top five from Kristen Bowie. Top five Kristen Bowie albums. That's written really badly. Top five. I got to quit reading things directly off the paper from Scotty because they never make any sense. And there's always a bunch of random letters thrown in that don't belong in the word. Kristen Bowie's top five albums of all time. You know what I mean. 503-733-2970. More of Tim Riley coming up at the bottom of the hour from the Ministry of Truth. Tom Likas at 3, Don and Mike at 7. Don't forget, tomorrow on this program, we'll be joined by Scott Downey from FilmPeopleRadio.com. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, back from New Zealand, I believe, our good friend Storm Large from Storm of the Balls. What's up, sister? How you doing?
I'm tired.
Where is New Zealand one of those weird places where when you get there, it's already like last week or something?
Yeah, right now it's 5 hours earlier and tomorrow.
See, and I know that maybe it's because I didn't go to enough school, but people can explain that kind of thing to me. I was watching this thing about the Concorde last night on the Discovery Channel, and they were talking about how, like, if you flew from England to New York on the Concorde, by the time you got here, it was an hour and a half before you left, which makes no sense at all.
It's weird. You cross what's called the international dateline. I don't know what it has to do with the equator or anything like that. But you miss a day when you're going there. It's pretty effed up, but I'm just glad to be home.
I always wonder if you get on a plane and if you can actually fly fast enough, if you can just, like, if you never actually have to face tomorrow. Like, if it's just, you know what I mean? If you can always stay, like, right ahead of the time zone change or whatever.
You probably just, like, hover over the dateline?
Seriously. I mean, never age. Be 34 forever. So, all right. Well, what was it now? Were you touring in New Zealand, or were you just, what were you doing there?
Yeah, me and the Balls went on tour in New Zealand. We have a promoter and a good friend over there who wanted to bring us over, and so we had a great time. It's a beautiful country, and the people are just nuts, great fans. They were fans of Rockstar, and now they're fans of my Balls, and so we're going to go back there and probably hit Australia and New Zealand and maybe Japan and get that whole region together. But it was amazing.
New Zealand's kind of small, though. I mean, it's not
a
very
tiny little country.
You've got the thing I wonder about is you've got a very, you and the band, but you especially, you've got a very, and I mean this in a good way, you've got a very specific American sensibility, especially to a lot of the music that you guys kind of mash together and your stage banter. I mean, you have a very American feel to you. And is that, do you ever feel like, is it weird? Is there much of a culture clash when you're kind of riffing on Dick Cheney or whatever it is you do?
Yeah, the political thing I don't really get into when I go to other countries. There's no language barrier in New Zealand. There's some sayings and things. There's vernaculars and whatnot that I don't understand what they're saying sometimes. But pretty much everyone speaks English. But I wouldn't want to get into the political thing, but the sex thing goes over fairly well. They're a little more conservative, but they're just as dirty.
Excellent. God bless them.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
And then you guys are doing, if I can mention this, you guys are doing, was it the 16th? Is it the 17th? You guys are doing a thing at Pride Day.
Yep, we're doing Gay Pride this Sunday at 4:30 at Tom McCall's Waterfront, I guess, down by the river. And then we're having a bunch of CD release parties coming up and down the west, northwest. So
this now is, and I just feel so out of the loop on so many things. Is your album out now? Is it gonna be out?
It's out now. Finally, it came out while I was overseas, so it was a little bit weird. And people are like, well, is it available? And I'm like, yeah, but I'm, you know, it's tomorrow where I am, so I don't know what's going on.
But
it's out. I'm going to bring you some.
Excellent. Well, you got to come see you guys. You've forgotten all about Rick.
No,
you got to come see us.
I've just been traveling. But here's the thing. I know Fridays are crazy for you.
Yes.
Two things. I wanted to bring you the new record. I have a clean version of it.
God bless you.
But I also wanted to see if you guys wanted me to bring Lucas.
That's right, because he's in town. I forgot
all
about
him. He's in town, and I asked him if he wanted me to bring him around, do some radio stuff. I'm going to interview him for PD Exposed tomorrow night at the show. But I wanted to see, you know, if you guys wanted to meet him and talk to him tomorrow.
Absolutely. You know what? Mi casa is su casa, and whatever the Spanish for his casa is as well. So, yeah, no, absolutely. No, the door, you, Storm, you have carte blanche. You know, the door is always open for you and your peeps.
Oh, man, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. But I know I don't like springing stuff on you last minute in case you got a bunch of stuff stacked up.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
No, we will gladly adjust accordingly for our friends.
So what time would you like me to bring the eyeliner pirate over?
Let's see. What the hell is tomorrow? Tomorrow is Friday, so I would say, like, any time after, I don't know, why don't we say, like, 1:30?
I will run that by him.
If that works, but I mean, probably anytime after 1. But I mean, yeah, around 1:30 is ideal. But anytime after 1, once the kind of news hour section is finished and so forth.
Excellent. Excellent.
Excellent. Cool, cool, cool.
And I'll bring you some new CDs, and I'll see you guys tomorrow. I miss you. We've been traveling a lot. I'm only home for another week or so, and then I got
and then
going
this is,
to Canada.
This is you and Davey and the whole crew out there on the road?
Yeah, we're all just going for broke.
Here's a dumb question. How is it, I mean, that you end up, and I just don't know anything about the recording industry, the music world, how is it that you end up getting booked to play in New Zealand? I mean, how is that? I mean, do you have to get a special promoter in New Zealand, or is it a guy here who talks to a guy there? How does it even work?
It starts with someone who's got some money, who wants to sponsor the show, and they put money in, and basically they take care of everything, and they take all the money, whatever we make.
Right.
And so it's kind of like an investment for them, and also it's not a, the first time you go to a country is not going to make a lot of money, so it has to be someone who is fairly liquid in that area, and yeah, they have to love the band, and this guy just loves the band and wanted to bring us over and did a great job promoting the shows. We got great press over there, and you know, when we go to Iceland, that was sponsored by Iceland Air, and because Rockstar was just huge over there.
Right.
So
there's some joke there about you knowing a guy who's fairly liquid, but I don't think I can put it together in my head quite. It's not. I'm not quite able to piece it together.
Let's save that one for Dr. Doug DeSteele.
Thank you so much.
Charlie, this is your mother. God, who came up with that? That's someone just needs to be broom-handled for that.
I'm with you on that, my friend.
Oh, my God.
All
well,
right.
I'll let you guys know tomorrow, and I'll see you there.
Cool. All right. Storm Large and probably Lucas Rossi again tomorrow. So we'll see you definitely tomorrow sometime. I don't know, later on. Just let me know. Drop me a note. Drop me an email. Or just show up. The door is always open, Storm.
Yes, sir. Thank
all
you,
right.
My friend.
Thank you. There you go. The website is stormlarge.com. Storm from Storm and the Balls. God bless her. All right. Thank you. All right. It's 503-733-2970. It's 212. All right, Kristen. This is when you earn your producer pay. All right. So do we do the top five? Do we take a break early? Do I spin the wheel of topics?
I think
the second worst story ever? What do I do?
I think it's a good idea to break early because then we get that out of the way and we have a chunk of time.
I've got the best idea. Let's break early. Fantastic. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. So, okay, tomorrow Storm Large in the studio with us, along with Scott Daly. Coming up, top five albums as chosen by Christian Bowie, Tim Riley coming up, and you decide what Rick Emerson watches on the TV. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Here's the sounds.
May 20th fire gutted.
I'm sorry?
Wow, I didn't know they were doing that on websites yet.
I don't even know what we were doing. What were you playing there?
Well, when you punch up certain stories now on Los Angeles radio stations, you automatically get the full report in sound.
Oh, we're sorry. I'm not that sorry. 503-733.
I was putting things together for the next Jim Roop thing, and they didn't realize that they did that.
That's okay. No one heard it. 503-733-2970. Hey, little peek behind the radio curtain, kids. 503-733-2970. All right, producer Christian Bowie. Today, right now, at this very moment, should we A, go to the news, B, do the top five, C, do the second worst story ever, or D, your choice. Go.
I think we should go to Tim.
Ladies and gentlemen at the Ministry of Truth, the Reverend Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Thank you, Christian Bowie. Did I just call you Christian?
I think so.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
You might be an agnostic, for all I know. Well, it says here, Arnold Schwarzenegger told a gathering of Hispanic journalists that immigrants should avoid Spanish language media if they want to learn English. You got to turn out that Spanish television set, said the governor. It's that simple. You've got to learn English.
Well, all right.
No, go ahead.
No. I do this and I'm going to go home and my granola crunching wife is going to screech at me again. So I'm sorry, honey. I mean that with love. It's such a tangled ball of tangly stuff because
of wax.
It's a tangled ball of wax. I mean, I don't even care.
I don't know either.
I do, here's the thing.
Come in here and do this.
I do care. But this is like yesterday when we were talking about the movie Airplane. And Sarah, sitting right there in that chair, said, well, I've never seen the movie Airplane. And I started ratcheting myself up for a whole monologue about how you got to see the movie Airplane to be literate in pop culture. And then I just kind of sagged under the weight of it, and I kind of went, F it. I just don't care enough. It just takes too much energy. I'll have Fatboy come in and yell at you about it later. He wasn't even here. No. So I had a listener call up and do the rant for me. That's my whole thing with Schwarzenegger telling people they got to start speaking English. Look, it's like I'm teetering on the brink. It's like, do I do part of the monologue or don't I?
Gee, I better move along then.
I just, you know.
I don't want any teetering on the brink.
I mean, here's the thing.
Yes.
Your chances of succeeding economically and otherwise in this country increase exponentially if you are bilingual, at least, if you are fluent in at least two languages. Now, I will be the first to admit that I'm a dumb white guy who doesn't speak Spanish, and I really should. I really ought to, because if you want to get ahead in this country, one of the simplest things you can do, and it is simple if you start young. Now, it is too late for me, as Anakin Skywalker says. It's too late for me. I guess I could be doing it now, but I'm lazy, and so I'm not. And, you know, what are you going
to
do?
Well, there are very few people for me to learn Spanish from.
But really what they ought to do in this country is, when you start going to public school, because, you know, kids are like sponges, man. They can just learn. Kids can learn all kinds of languages when they're a kid. When they're a kid, I say redundantly. When kids are young, they can learn. I can't even speak one language. When kids are young,
sounds sensible to me.
I suppose they can learn all kinds of language. But it's a scientific fact that as you age, if you do not develop alternate languages in your head, those sections of your brain effectively atrophy. They don't. They no longer. You know, they just sort of turn themselves off because they figure they're not used.
I heard you can't learn anything over 30.
Well, I know that once you hit the age of, I forget what it is. I'm kind of making it up, but it's like there's some certain age. It's like 18, 20, whatever it is.
You only hold so much.
And it's like once, if you haven't started to learn a second language by that time, it becomes infinitely harder. Not impossible, and especially for certain people who have a facility for languages, it can be easier. But the point is, if you start kids young, they can learn 2, 3, even 4 languages sometimes relatively easily.
It's not uncommon in Europe at all.
No, in fact, I have a friend of mine where it's like the mom speak. I have a friend of mine who has a kid, the grandmother, you know, his mom speaks French, and so the deal is the parents talk to the kid in English, but the grandmother only talks to the kid in French. As a result, kid's going to speak English and French, a largely useless language, but what are you going to do? I have a producer who speaks Norwegian, so, I mean, you know, what do you, you know, who am I? Who am I to make assessments? All I'm saying is, in this country, for individuals and for the country as a whole to be economically competitive, even more so than we are, everyone in this country from, like, jump, from ground up, ought to speak English and Spanish. I mean, that ought to be required study in school.
It's a really easy language, too.
It is largely, relatively speaking, it is an easy language. And look, the fact of the matter is, if you are an immigrant to this country who does not speak English, it's going to be a lot harder for you and your kids to make headway. If you want to be economically successful in this country, you increase your chances if you speak English for the most part. However, if you are a person who only speaks English, especially if you live in vast swaths of the South, or certainly in California or large sections of the Northwest, your life is going to be a lot easier, and you're going to be able to interact with customers, bosses, and just plain folks a lot easier if you speak Spanish. I say this as a hypocrite who does not speak Spanish, but you know what? It doesn't change the fact that it is true. Everybody in this country ought to speak English and Spanish. English is the single most important language you can learn in this world, and that's an indisputable, that is what's called empiric fact. It is the only language required at all air traffic control towers in the world. It is the only language required at all stock markets in the world. But by the same token, if you're living in this country, you really ought to be able to speak English and Spanish. So he's kind of right and he's kind of wrong, and that's it, and I'm done with it. I'm done with it. That's the last I'm going to say about it today.
What use is the Norwegian language?
Really?
What would you be asking for in Norway?
I don't know. More salted fish? What else is there to ask for? But fish and beer in that country.
Sauna?
I don't know. What do you ask for in Norwegian? Don't answer me in Norwegian, please. Really, honestly.
Oh, wait a minute. You're a Kreshamite who speaks Norwegian?
Yes.
How is that possible?
Because I'm Norwegian.
How'd you end up in Gresham? When your forefathers and mothers were...
Unfortunate karma.
They moved from Montana to Gresham.
Really? That's just a downward spiral.
Where to?
Where to then? A sewer?
Well, inner southeast Portland in my opinion.
That was so uncalled
for. I'm sorry.
It's Christian Day, I see.
And you live in the real sewer, which is the funniest thing about it.
I'm not trying to pick on you specifically.
I mean, come on, Rick. You grew up in Kennewick.
No. Trust me. You know what it is? I'm in a glass house full of holes. I'm fully aware of that. I'm just saying, from Montana to Gresham, I mean, that's the beginning of a really bad trend. You got to stem that now.
But people who live in stone houses shouldn't be throwing glass.
Yes,
it is true.
All right.
Well, let's move on to something more cheerful, shall we?
Yeah.
The ladies of the View. I bet you can't name any of them aside from Barbara Walters.
I only know the hot stupid one.
All right. I'm not sure if Joy Behar is the hot stupid one, but she says she's not holding her breath about winning a daytime Emmy award.
I'm not a big award person. I can't say that I like really am dying to win an award.
Jesus.
I was happy to win the Dante Award when I scored an Italian in the ninth grade. That was
eating the microphone?
Does she win the Dante Award because listening to her is like being taken to the ninth circle?
I'm not a big awards person.
Jesus. You know, the funny thing is, I don't know, my voice tends to be a little louder than the voice of other people on the show, but all three of us recoiled in auditory horror as Joy Behar was speaking right there. Jesus, what a horrible, irritating woman.
It is true.
All right.
One of the nation's largest breakfast food makers is changing how it markets to children. How is that possible? The Kellogg Company has announced it will phase out advertising its products to kids under the age of 12. Instead, they'll concentrate on advertising over the age of 13.
Well, that makes
I don't know how they enforce that.
All the difference in the world right there.
It does. Mothers Against Cereals say that Kellogg's plunge is...
Are you kidding me?
Anything that can help our kids understand the benefits of healthy eating is, I think, strongly encouraged by any mom.
Shut
the
your hole.
We ought to do more. I think this is just the first step.
Oh, in the book.
Why are moms buying cereal if they're unhealthy? Kids are supposed to be bouncing off the walls and yelled at. It's part of childhood.
What are you doing? Are you giving your kid the checkbook and just sending them to the supermarket
to
spend
for
themselves?
You betcha.
If you don't want your kid eating an entire box of chocolate frosted sugar bombs, don't buy it, you stupid... seriously. I got to quit getting so upset about things like this.
I'm not a big awards person.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for putting it all in relative context. Seriously, if you don't want your kid to eat crap in the house, you can't stop what they're eating. They'll get it on the streets, I suppose. Don't fill your larder with crap if you don't want your kids to eat it. Seriously, I'm not going to put them in the book. I'm just going to say, I considered it, though. I considered putting whoever that was in the book for just a moment there. All right.
Moms Against Cereals.
Are they not really called Moms? You're just screwing with me.
I am.
But all right. Fun. But you know, the thing is how sad that I just couldn't tell.
I know it.
For a minute,
well, that's how well I do my job.
Jesus, for a minute I was convinced there really was a Mom Against Cereals.
Jesus. How about she's a spokesperson for mothers.
Mom,
that's all it says.
Moms against doing their own goddamn job and keeping sugared cereals out of the house if they don't want their corpulent little children to eat them. Moms against, doing their own freaking job as a parent and exercising some responsibility at the store.
Yeah.
Moms against being able to stand up to your 5-year-old and tell her she can't have a pound of Go-Gurt for dinner.
Go ahead, just drop them off at soccer practice and listen to Buzz on the way home.
I'm going
to
lay down on the floor for a minute. You just go ahead.
Oh. Was that addressed to the moms who live in Bethany? Well, let's talk about the Soup Nazi, shall we?
Okay.
The soup chain that inspired the Soup Nazi will be opening up a restaurant in Pittsburgh this fall. The original Soup Man spokesman, John Rerick, said the store will offer 8 to 10 varieties of soup every day, including the famous crab bisque, which Seinfeld characters Jerry and Kramer were addicted to.
Actually, the one in Seinfeld was crab bisque, the one that Jerry's really into. But the most popular soup of Al's has always been his lobster bisque. It contains 22% fresh Maine lobster by volume. And you dip your spoon in there, you come out with a giant hunks of lobster.
Mmm, doesn't sound good, Tim?
Yes, I'd rather have a sugar cereal.
Yeah. Soup Nazi expanding. There's some joke there about the...
But we're not going to do it today.
Okay.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Hi, it's the Rick Emerson Show. What in the name of God do you want?
Hey, are you still laying on the floor over there, buddy?
No, I'm standing up now. What's up?
Okay. Hey, you know, that Mothers Against Cereal is crap. Because, you know, I have a 9-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
My 9-year-old daughter likes cereals like, you know, Rice Chex and Special K. You know, not all cereal is bad. It's just the completely loaded with sugar crap.
Here's the thing.
I know it's not you.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Mothers Against Cereal.
That's right. No. I was just going to say, No, you're right. No, you're right, sir. It is Mothers Against Cereal, and I do share your agreement that they have gone too far. This organization, Mothers Against Cereal, is overstepping their bounds. They've lost all sense of proportion, and they need to be stopped, sir.
Stomped into the ground.
That's you who said that, not me. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're not in favor of stomping most things. I wasn't. You know, for a minute I was gonna straighten it all out, and then I decided I would just let him plunge on ahead. All right.
Well, here's a story you asked me for earlier.
Okay.
Roy L. Peterson Jr. wanted to dress sharply for his new job as an administrative law judge here.
This is, okay, he's going in the goddamn book. Hold on a second.
Roy L. Peterson Jr.
I fully support that one.
Hold on, he's going in the book. I need a sound effect when someone goes into the book. Hold on. Roy
L.
Pearson, P-E-A-R-S-O-N?
That is correct. Junior, not to be confused with senior.
Oh, yeah, I don't want to. All right. Pearson Jr., and he is in Washington, D.C.?
That is correct, yes.
Washington, D.C.
I'm not sure of the zip code.
Pants Judge. Okay, I'll remember him. Fix his
we'll remember back. You.
Oh, no, he's gonna get his talking to. All right, go ahead.
So when his neighborhood drag cleaner misplaced a pair of expensive pants he had planned to wear for his first week on the bench, Judge Pearson and his
brother Skitch and his grandfather Skeeter.
So annoyed was he that he sued for $67.3 million. You see, the case of the Judge Pants, which opened for trial in the packed courtroom here on Tuesday, has been lampooned on talk radio and the blogosphere as an example of American legal excess. And it has spurred comments to the District of Columbia Bar and city officials from national tort reform and trial lawyers groups worried about its effect on public trust of the legal system.
So basically, the upshot here is he was patronizing his Korean laundromat, or dry cleaning place.
That's correct.
He was patronizing a Korean dry cleaning place. They lost his pants.
Yes. The owners were Korean immigrants who came to the U.S. in 1992. Could not find one pair of pants. And the judge demanded $1,150 for a replacement suit. The owners did not respond, so he sued.
And now he is asking for how much money?
$67.3 million.
He is asking for $67 million. I swear to God that we're not making this up. And you probably have already heard about this. Dennis Miller's been on it for a few days.
We don't make things up.
He's asking for $67 million because they can't find his pants. And the best part about this is, and I wish that we had video or audio of this, was when he was on the stand the other day crying as he described the pants. I swear to you that's real. He was on the stand, and he had to stop and regain his composure because he broke down into tears and began weeping while describing the lost pants. I mean, unless the pants were made out of the Ark of the Covenant, I don't really understand. Unless they were made out of the Shroud of Turin, I don't really know. I mean, I've lost all. He's in the book. That's all I'm saying. Roy L. Pearson, Jr., Pants Judge of Washington, D.C. Listen to this. You know what the sound of it? You're in the book. And someday, there's going to come a day of reckoning, and you will get yours. So there you go. Right there. In the book, you bastard. And when I say get yours, I mean you will get your stern talking to.
Yes.
As will everybody in the book. That's all I'm going to say about it.
Page 2.
Edith Schlarp loves her Bose radio. All right. Should we do the top 5 here, Kristen?
That'd be fun.
That'd be wacky. All right, ladies and gentlemen, here's your top 5 for a Thursday on the Rick Emerson Show.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Fire.
Feel free to ignore Scotty's many copious notes there.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to
do. Scotty, have these songs been cleaned?
Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I'd love to count, don't you?
You're sure? I'm looking at honorable mention in particular. You're sure that I'm not going to play this in here? Perhaps the F-Void. Okay, it's on you.
None of the language that Scotty might hear if he comes home late at night.
Yes, exactly. I don't want to hear any salty talk during these songs. All right. So Kristen Bowie, who is filling in ably for Sarah X. Dillon today and tomorrow. The last time you were here, now how weird is this? The last time you filled in the show, it was a year ago this week, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
How weird.
Then she filled in when you were on vacation and the studio kind of dropped dead. And we
it was Tim and I dealing with absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Was that right before Christmas?
Yeah.
Was that during my happy nervous breakdown?
It was a joyous Noel.
When I called you going, we're in a different studio because it broke.
Yeah. Yeah, and I came in, it was in a production. That's right.
And if we get one microphone working, we'll consider ourselves lucky.
I do remember that. It was right before Christmas.
All right. So last time you were here, we asked her to do your top five musical acts of all time, which was great, by the way, and gave me hope for the next generation of Americans and their musical taste. Now these are your. Now this is not exactly your top five because unfortunately I
had to alter it.
I failed to bring some of my music library to work today, and we didn't really have time to put this together. It is my fault for not asking far enough in advance. So this is within reason, given the resources we had access to today. This is more or less your top five albums of all time. Scotty's already typing on the screen that you should have put ABBA on the list.
He has been trying to
Scotty, what did you do with ABBA? Knock it off. All right, this is more or less Kristen Bowie's top five albums of all time. Take it away, Jim Riley.
But honorable mention, it's Green Day with a Long View, the Dookie album.
So this is the Duke, so these are representative cuts.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
This whole thing is written badly.
Sit around and watch the tube, but nothing's on.
That beginning riff really inspired me in the beginning. I wanted to learn how to play bass guitar and never really got around to it.
You know, this is such a great album, though.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. Let's listen for the profanity.
Sick of all the same old days.
I hate that.
This release sold over 8 million albums, according to Scott.
When did we in radio decide that we were going to start playing profanity backwards? When did kids? Is that how the kids like it?
Yeah.
That just sounds stupid. You know, when I was a boy, we bleeped things and we liked it. Well, whatever. I gotta say, I was 21 when this came out. I remember seeing the, and I'm not gonna pretend that I was like old school Green Day, like I was all on the smoothed out slappy hours tip or whatever. I remember I heard about these guys when Dookie came out. I have to say this, and I've said this several times. If I was to take, and I know this is your list, so I don't mean to dominate, but I was going to say about this one record, about Dookie here. This album, I don't even really know what this means as such, but this is what I've said, that the Dookie album, this sounds like my adolescence felt. If I had to conjure up one record that has the feel of my adolescence, it's Dookie.
I totally understand that. Yeah,
even though this album didn't exist when I was a teenager, I was already 21 when this came out, but this is what, this whole album, Longview, Basket Case, Sassafras Roots, Pulling Teeth, When I Come Around, this album encapsulates perfectly the feeling and vibe that my adolescence had.
I think a lot of people can identify with that, really.
It's just brilliant. And this guy is such a... Billy Joe Armstrong is just such a brilliant songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
They're talented players. I mean, there's nothing wrong. And I know that a lot of... You know, there's a lot of the punk guys who will use terms like, well, it's just mall punk. You know, it's just stupid. There's nothing more tiresome than some punk fan that goes on and on about some bogus crap distinction between different types of music. You know, whatever.
Music is music. If it's good, it's good. If it's bad, it's bad.
Melody is not a crime.
Exactly.
Good production values are not a crime. This is a great record. It's a great band. I mean, God love them. I love Green Day. I really do. Fantastic. And they saved us from the atonal sludge of Seattle.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, here's Jim Riley.
And number five, it's the Beyonce Boys, and she's Kathy from the License to Three album.
What a... License to Three. That's genius. That's like when Rush used to call Malcolm X the 10th. God, what a great record. Now, I was around this
I was going for
day.
Paul's Boutique, but...
Scotty didn't have
Paul's Boutique. No, I was so upset.
Paul's Boutique is only one of the greatest hip hop albums of all time.
Exactly.
Scotty. You gotta give up to License Deal though.
I actually saw these guys when I was three when they were playing at the Rose Festival in 86 before they were big. They
With
hadn't
who?
Even signed.
Was it like them and LL Cool J?
Yeah, it was just one of those Saturday shows where my dad had his three-year-old little girl up on his shoulder.
That is so great. I've never seen the Beastie Boys.
Really?
No, never.
Oh, you're missing out.
I know. I've never had an opportunity.
Yeah.
Never, you know, whatever.
Great show. I went up and saw them a couple years ago in Seattle, actually, too. I had floor tickets for that. It was awesome.
It's a great record. Rick Rubin, God love him. Rick Rubin is probably the Phil Spector of our generation. Fantastic producer. This album is so wonderful.
I mean, this album, not that Paul's Boutique isn't, because Paul's Boutique is stunning. Paul's Boutique is a masterpiece. But License to Ill, License to Ill created a whole genre. And I'm not one of, I don't, like so many people, I don't reflexively hate the rap rock genre the way so many people do. Rap rock is like anything. There's good music in that genre, there's bad music. But this is, I mean, it created a whole different type of music with it. Ah, great stuff. All right, we're counting on Christian Bowie's top five albums of all time.
And number four, Johnny Cash, Folsom Prison Blues, live from Folsom Prison.
Fantastic. Prison?
Prison.
I'm a big Johnny Cash fan. Old country in general.
You can't take anything away from Johnny Cash. We were just talking about that during the break, how I think all of us at one time or another have been country DJs. And I think all of us have had to wade through like mountains and mountains of bright, shining pop, dreck, masquerading as country. My wife was on the iTunes store last night trying to get me to like some new country act. And it was just more of the same buff to a high polish, top 40 garbage. But, you know, you hear the real thing and it just stands out.
There's a few things coming out in country. Not much, but a few.
I remember when I heard, and this is a few years old already, but that Long Black Train song by Josh Turner. There's a band called The Mavericks I like a lot. Who else? God, who did I hear? I heard some country act the other day that I liked a lot.
I have a lot of respect for Taylor Swift, believe it or not.
Well, she writes her own stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, this is embarrassing. Can I tell you that I like Big and Rich?
No.
I know it's embarrassing.
Who are they?
They did that Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy.
They are awesome songwriters. And they have their hands in everything right now.
It's just so embarrassing that I like those guys. Whatever you say about Johnny Cash, he was the real deal. I mean, just a shadow that looms larger than anybody, even larger than Hank Sr.
Oh, he's going to last another 50 years at least.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he died.
I mean, his music, Tim.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Counting down Christian Bowie's top five albums of all time. Here's Tim Riley.
And number three is Queen with Bicycle Race from the Jazz album.
Oh, now you're in my wheelhouse.
Queen fan.
I love Queen. Ride my bicycle. Sir, if you don't like Queen, you can get the hell out of this country. Can you take your citizenship test? I know that they're, not an American band.
They're one of the only groups I know of that can really take a rock sound and make it sound orchestral.
Yeah, without sounding, they sound pompous, but in just the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like most progressive rock bands, like Emerson, Lake and Palmer, or Yes, or, most of the prog rock bands, they just sound tedious and just pompous in an uninteresting way. They just sound bloated.
Definitely.
These guys are pompous, but with a wink and a smile and a self, not deprecation, but a self-awareness.
They have finesse. Totally. They're pompous.
Well, and I mean, Freddie Mercury, that's all about Freddie Mercury, or Farouk Balzara, as I think he was born. Here's a perfect example. You see the Queen live at Wembley album? Freddie Mercury comes out, I swear to God, with a crown, a robe, and a scepter. Shirtless.
That's awesome.
Wearing spandex pants that accentuate his scrotum. With a crown and a scepter and a robe. And I mean, and he's just, and he says something like, thank you, all hail me, or whatever. And it's like,
so cool.
God love him. That's what set those guys apart. God, I love Queen. I miss him to this day. I really do.
I will forever.
People say this about everybody who dies, and it's usually not true. But there will never be another Freddie Mercury. Ever.
There's been people who have tried.
That guy from My Chemical Romance tries and fails.
Yeah. The Darkness was another one who tried.
You talk about a band that should have been aborted.
They tried so hard, though.
That's so great. Just the audacity of using bicycle bells for a whole middle age. God, I love Queen. All right, counting down Christian Bowie's top five albums of all time.
Number two, the Ramones with Blitzkrieg Bop.
God bless you.
Blitzkrieg Bop album.
I wish I was a little bit older because I've never known a world without the Ramones. I wish I could have. I have friends of mine who are actually old enough where they said they heard this or a friend would play this for them, and they would say things like, I thought the record was broken, or I thought something was wrong with the stereo, because it sounded so weird and fast. Listen to that.
Let's go! Let's go!
I forget who it was, but there was, I read an interview, or I interviewed someone, I forget who it was, some guy though, he was telling me the story about the day he heard this first Ramones album, and he said that he was with his father when he bought it, they go home, and the kid puts it on, the dad is right there, the kid puts it on, this song comes out of the speakers, and the father picks up the record and looks at it while this is playing, hands it back to the kid, and the father says, you just be careful. Because it was just so groundbreaking.
My dad introduced me to everyone, like the Cramps and Queen and the Ramones.
Why did you get cool parents and I got mine?
Hey, my mom was Catholic and got mad that I had Alanis Morissette's album when it came out.
Yeah. Kids were required to buy that anyway. Yeah, totally. So great. The first Ramones song I ever heard was Do You Remember Rock and Roll Radio, the Phil Spector one. And I remember playing that, I had it on a K-Tel record, on K-Tel Rock Hits of the 80s. And that Phil Spector Wall of Sound came out of my parents' sound system, which was pretty good. And it just, it's like it blew my brain out of the back of my head. All right, we gotta play this all the way to the end. I'm so glad these guys have gotten their recognition in, even after they were all dead. In your face. God love them. All right, Kristen Bowie, top five albums of all time.
Okay, let's go back 35 entire years.
I wasn't even born.
35 years ago. At number one, David Bowie was Space Oddity.
I'm not a big David Bowie fan. He falls into the
category. You don't know what you're missing.
I'm just saying, he falls into the category of Bob Dylan for me in that guys that, who are not really my preference to listen to, but who I respect a lot. David Bowie certainly is his own. He's a man who, he is sort of the original Madonna. Recreated himself over and over. You know, he did the Aladdin Sane thing and the Thin White Duke, and certainly a man who, he was existential, recrafted his own identity over and over again.
And you gotta love somebody who went by Ziggy Stardust.
Well, that's, especially during that period. Nixon was president.
I mean, he was, well, David Bowie was, he pushed the envelope. He just didn't give a rip. I mean, I guess enough that he was coked out of his mind a lot of the time, but I mean, he...
Who wasn't in the 70s? Come on.
No, I mean, he was, you know, the thing was, he was audacious, or audacious, however it is you said. He had ambition, and you know what? He had a big, grand, sweeping vision, and I admire guys with a vision. I admire anybody who has huge, big, bold ideas, mm-hmm. and risks falling flat on their face to do something different. You know, God love him. I mean, I really do love David Bowie for that reason. I love David Bowie as you know, for what he did and what he accomplished. I mean,
I was going to put the Sex Pistols, but Scotty didn't have it.
Scotty didn't have the Sex Pistols?
I know! I scolded him for at least 5 minutes, I promise.
We should kill him. Oh, we got a break, don't we?
Yeah.
Oh, all right, we'll take this to break, Kristen. Back after this, we'll wrap it up. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Pointless, don't do it. All right, hey, we now enter the saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. As Rush used to say, no time to be fair to another caller. So if you call today, you can get on. My apologies, my friends will try to get the alarm. 503-733-2970 if you like, because we're going to be back in 20 hours. Let's see, we got Likas coming up next. Flash Friday tomorrow. Likas 101 today, 5 to 7. Donna Mike at 7. John and Jeff at 11. Tomorrow, Stephanie Miller. That's right. Stephanie Miller. I can't do it. I used to be able to do that. Stephanie Miller, 6 to 8. Dennis Miller, 8 to 11. We'll be back tomorrow in the studio. Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com. Our good friend Storm Large. And quite possibly Lucas Rossi from Rockstar Supernova. We're going to next see our radio correspondents Lisa Goddard and James Roop. Rick Emerson Show produced today by the lovely Kristen Bowie, who is in for Sarah X. Dillon. Tim Riley in the newsroom. Scotty J. the PA. Dave's in the gatekeeper. As always, don't let the bastards grind you down and do try to help the retarded, a task at which I once again spectacularly failed. In my face. See y'all tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Be safe. Bye.